this episode, Once Upon the Great White North. Hello, and welcome to the Once Upon a Geek podcast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. On today's episode, we are finding our joy by talking about our favorite superhero team from the Great White North. Yes, we're here to discuss Alpha Flight, everybody's favorite.
Woohoo!
My name is the Irritable Evil Shag, and I'm your host, but thankfully, as you just heard, I'm not doing this alone, because that would be horrible. For this episode, since it's all about Alpha Flight, you know, I wanted to have an authentic Canadian viewpoint. So, of course, I invited somebody from Arizona. Exactly. The only state in the nation that makes Florida sometimes look sane and logical.
Oh, it's true.
Folks, please help me welcome to the show Mr. Sean Ross. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. I look, Arizona has a lot in common with Canada in that they're both land masses.
Right.
I guess that we have flags.
You have crazy people, both of you. So
we have crazy people. And I was telling you before the show, we do actually have a freakishly large Canadian population in Arizona because they move here to get away from the weather. And so every like fourth person in Arizona is Canadian. So I feel like I can represent. I think I'm good.
Well, in my case, in Florida, all the other Canadians that don't go to Arizona at least come here for the winter. So it works out well.
Yeah, it does. It does. And man, this is so awesome. I love Alpha Flight. This is one of my all-time favorite teams, even though I don't know why. We're going to probably discover that during the course of this show. But it is. It's not one of my all-time favorite teams. It has a special place in my heart and in my bin dives. And so I'm excited to talk about it.
And me too. And you were the first person I thought of, without a doubt, about this, because we both have, like you said, an indefinable love for Alpha Flight that makes no sense whatsoever. But we do, and that's what I need. I need someone who feels pure joy, unbridled enthusiasm for Alpha Flight. So that's why I owe an apology to all my Canadian friends, because I needed someone who is just blind to all the flaws in the Alpha Flight comic book. And Canadians are far too informed about what's wrong with this book. So I just want to extend apologies to my friends like Siskoid, Mike Dynas, Gore Tolton, Rob Williams, Sean Corey, Alan Wright, Mike LaCroix, Harley Holmberg, and all my other Canuck friends. Please understand, this is just a couple of dorks having fun with it, and that's what we needed. And I actually proposed calling this episode The People Versus Alpha Flight, because, again, we love Alpha Flight so much, but, like, there's so many people, when you mention Alpha Flight, they, like, roll their eyes so hard.
Those people are wrong.
Well, is Alpha Flight the Nickelback of superhero teams, or what?
Oh, my God. That hurt. That hurt like a primal level. I like to think of Alpha Flight as that girl you dated that you have all of these funny, fond memories of, but all of your friends hated, and they roll their eyes when you bring her up. When you're like, remember so-and-so? She was great. And they're like, she was awful. You were awful together. We don't know what's wrong with you.
Alpha Flight is my Heather. Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, yeah. And I don't mean Heather McNeil. But anyway. So, as we just said, it's absolutely indefinable. But guess what? The first topic of the show is to define it. So, Sean, I'm going to ask you to now describe why you love Alpha Flight, even though you just told me you can't do it.
I've thought about this, and I love Alpha Flight for its dysfunction is in its DNA. Uh-huh. And it starts at the very beginning, right? John Byrne did not want to do this book, and he fought Jim Shooter for 4 years about it. He co-creates Alpha Flight with Chris Claremont, literally creates them as just, hey, who would be good adversaries for the current X-Men lineup? Doesn't put much thought into the characters, paints with a broad brush on some Canadian, you know, themes and tropes because he's Canadian, doesn't want to think about him again, but they're freakishly popular. And so they do another two-parter, you know, with AX-Men, and he adds a couple new members. He had Snowbird, you know, and hey, okay, I don't ever want to touch these characters again. But Jim Shooter keeps coming to him and saying, hey, John, if you don't do this book, I'm going to have somebody else do it. If you don't do this book, I'm going to have somebody else do it. And also, by the way, it's going to make a ton of money. It's officially the first, maybe second X-Men spinoff, depending on what New Mutants is coming out. But it's right there. They're both in 1983. And so it is very much Byrne like, I don't want to lose all this money. I don't want anybody else to touch this. I'm just going to do it. And the disdain, and John Byrne is a master of a lot of things. Clean lines, you know, attractive characters, and disdain. He is a master of those three things. And his Alpha Flight book just drips with this undercurrent of animosity and conflict and anger, and it's surly. It's a surly book. Mm-hmm. It's the only way I can put it. And because it's baked into its DNA from day one, all the writers and artists who would come after, no matter how happy or carefree or how joyous their other work may be, they couldn't help but fall into Burns' surly trap. And I think it's what I love about this book is that it is not aspiring to be the Avengers. It's not a family book necessarily, like X-Men. It's not, you know, Teen Titans. It's just its own highly annoyed pocket of the Marvel Universe that's staring down at you and insulting you in English and French at the same time. And I want its approval. And so I really love it. I don't think it's a healthy relationship, but right. I really love my relationship with Alpha Flight. What about you?
It's a little S&M there, superhero team for you there.
Oh, okay, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't speak to my mental health very well. I do think it's a bit of a Rorschach test. The more of a fan you are, and especially of certain runs, the more you probably need to be on a medicine that ends in a vowel.
Well, I absolutely love those aspects of the team, and I'm going to talk lovingly about the Burn run later. But for me, when I got into this whole thing, when I started collecting comic books, it was around the time of Secret Wars, and all my friends were already reading Alpha Flight. Rather than most of the guys we grew up who were persecuted for liking comic books, I actually was peer pressured into reading comic books. And so I would ride home on the bus with my buddy Kyle and all these other kids, and they would just talk about the Alpha Flight stories as if they were amazing. You know, like, oh my gosh, and Guardian dies, and they have to keep going, and Heather and the Plo... Well, maybe they didn't mention Plodex.
No one likes the Plodex.
But they mentioned all these other things, right? And they make the book sound amazing. So by the time I finally started buying it, years later, during the Fabian Nicieza run, for me, these early stories that were already legendary. I loved, because, you know, also I had the Marvel role-playing game, so I had all the character cards with them, so I knew who they were, but I hadn't read them, so I was already in love with them before I even read the first issue. So it was baked into my DNA at that point. Then once I started reading them, it's like, I think part of my love for them is kind of like they're the underdogs. They're underloved. You know, they're the not ready for primetime players of the Marvel Universe. They're the off-brand Avengers, and there's something about that I really like. And then there's another aspect. You have a friend named Dr. G, who's a big mm-hmm. fan of role-playing games. And yes. Dr. G and I both understand very detailedly that when you build a superhero team in a role-playing game, they have to be very balanced. There's a formula you follow. You want different powers. You want different cultures and backgrounds. And I'm a sucker for the carefully balanced teams like that. And then the 1980s were just sick with these things. They were everywhere. And so in a lot of ways, it feels like a role-playing game. And you add on top of that, there's also this beautiful theme across the whole team. And they're basically, every single character, at least the original run, is based on some aspect of Canada. They are essentially the Fourth of July for Canada, which...
Wow, damning with faint praise there, buddy.
Exactly. And that's the kind of love I have for these guys. So, you know, Guardian, literally draped in the Canadian flag, right? You know, Shaman is there to represent the First Nations, which is a big, important part of Canada. Sasquatch is the Bigfoot legends, right? You know, Northstar and Aurora are the Northern Lights. Snowbird, you know, she represents the wilderness and the animals. And Merida represents connections with the ocean and anything else that's bad, really, is Merida. And then Puck, literally a hockey puck. I mean, it's crazy how much... That they are. And again, it literally 4th of July is what it feels like to me. But regardless of all that, I just love them. Mm-hmm, in fact, I've too. Got in my office, I've got, you know, those like expensive Marvel busts they make that are like, I don't know, like 8 inches tall or whatever like that. Maybe 9 inches tall, whatever.
Yep.
I have 9 of these things.
Wow.
All of Alpha Flight members, all the original team plus Vindicator. Heather is Vindicator. Got all of them proudly on display in my office. Like, everything else in here is pretty much DC or Doctor Who, but I've got Alpha Flight. Let me tell you, I just love them that much.
That is amazing. That is. I have seen you. You've shared pictures of your Alpha Flight collection, and it's really impressive. I think even John Byrne would be like, too much, eh?
He might. Him and Puck both, yes. Now, we have a lot more to talk about it. Before we get too much further, though, we do need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of Once Upon a Geek is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for comic book trades, hardcovers, and other collect editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, each episode, we're going to select a comic book collected edition to briefly discuss from the library that, you know, usually ties into this episode in some way, shape, or form. I made sure to go first and pick the best book and screw mm-hmm. Sean over. Believe it or not, this pick that I did is the reason you and I are here today. I picked the X-Men Alpha Flight trade paperback, which is this collection. It collects all the original appearances of Alpha Flight in X-Men, where, you know, it's just Guardian and then the original Alpha Flight and then the Wendigo story. And then it collects the two X-Men Alpha Flight miniseries. Because what happened was I've owned this thing for a long time and I pulled it off my shelf, I don't know, whenever, a couple months ago. And I'm like, you know, I feel like reading this. Started posting pictures of it on social media, and that's when you and I started going, hey. In fact, I think you might have, I don't know, I want to say you might have even asked me, are you reading for fun? Or are you going to do an episode? I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I wasn't afraid to fish. I wasn't afraid to be like, hey, just in case.
So I don't think I was planning an episode at that moment, but then I sure as hell was. So this is a great collection. You know, cover art by John Byrne. A lot of the art inside is by John Byrne. And then you get, I want to say, Paul Neary on some of the X-Men Alpha Flight stuff. I mean, it's a great collection. It's really wonderful. It's 280 pages. Normally goes for $29.99. You can get it for 38% off, so it's only $18.59. So again, you love X-Men. You love Alpha Flight. Read their stories together. I shouldn't have to say much more than that.
That original X-Men Alpha Flight two-parter from 85 has Paul Smith art.
Oh, I said Paul Neary. Paul Smith. Yes, thank you.
Beautiful. It's yes. Beautiful.
It's a fantastic story too. They go when they, you know, they end up with Loki and so good, so good. All right, so sir, what did you bring that ties in Alpha Flight in some way, shape, or form?
So I tried to go the Canada route, but like you said, you had grabbed the best one. So I figured I would go with Byrne since he's the definitive creator on Alpha Flight. So I thought, well, other than Alpha Flight, what is Byrne's single greatest work? And obviously it's the photo issues of Star Trek that he does in the 2000s. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Next Men. Okay.
So it's Fantastic Four, Day and Night. It's still the best Fantastic Four run. Maybe comes in second to Hickman, but it's in the top two for sure. So I chose Fantastic Four by Byrne, hardcover volume one. And this collects not just his early Fantastic Four issues, but a lot of the issues he did that sort of led up to that work, including Marvel 2-in-1 number 50. It's The Thing versus The Thing, which is a seminal issue. I love that comic. Couple of issues of Marvel Team Up. We've got Fantastic Four 209 to 218, which is before he actually comes on the book as a writer. He's the artist on it. And then you get 232 to 260, which is the first half of his run. You get Annual 17. You get the Avengers issue with Annihilus. It's just it's chock full of Byrne goodness. And this was back when he still drew backgrounds. And, you know, this is really his seminal run. I think of this as his Alpha Flight and Fantastic Four is the single greatest works by one of the best creators of all time. It is a hardcover. It was $125. It is 38% off, so you can get it for $77.50, which is like the price of a donut and coffee right now. So, and a tank of gas. So, you know, maybe take the bus for a day or a week and pick up the Byrne hardcover instead.
I have to admit that I have never read the Byrne Fantastic Four run.
Really?
It's been a blind spot. I started it and I was like, oh, this is good. And then something shiny took me away from it. So I've never actually read the run. So it's just something I've been meaning to do. And now you got me thinking about it.
It's so good. And it really peaks. It climaxes with the trial of Reed Richards in the 270s, 280s. And it is just it's my favorite run of Fantastic Four. And I think it's the gold standard against which all other runs are sort of measured.
I like how you snuck in your beloved Hickman there. I heard you sneak that in there. So
his Fantastic Four run is excellent.
I agree. I've read that. It was very good. But I just know how you are. You know, everything Hickman all the time.
Yeah, a little bit. But again, I like Alpha Flight. So I'm not exactly trustworthy.
So folks, for these and all your other comic book trade paperback needs, please visit instocktrades.com. You know, it's also bears mentioning that Fantastic Four run is another reason Byrne didn't want to do Alpha Flight, because he just didn't want to do another team book.
He was writing and drawing two team books at the same time. So he was writing and drawing two issues a month. I mean, that is just by today's standards.
Oh, that would never happen.
It's astounding. Yeah.
Yeah. So folks, in addition to InStock Trades, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because running the Firewater Podcast Network, so many shows requires, you know, a lot of online hosting and service fees and things like that. And a while back, we realized that we needed some help. And so we asked for you guys to step up and assist us through the Patreon, and you guys have been amazing. So if you're enjoying shows on the network, the best way to support us is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW podcast. And when you're there, please consider supporting the network. And at certain tiers, you'll get mentioned on your favorite shows, just like these folks who would like to be recognized, David A's Gutierrez and Gord Tolton, who is in fact an actual Canadian. So folks, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcasts. Now, as I say on every one of these episodes, this is not just my show. It's not just Sean's show. It's all of our show. It's the whole geeky community show. So we need to hear from you guys on the social media. Go out there. Tell us why you love Alpha Flight. Tell us what you don't love about Alpha Flight. Tell us your favorite run. Tell us all the things wrong with Arizona. Whatever you want to do, get out there and tag us. You can find us on Twitter, at least for now, as Once Upon a Geek. I don't know. Jury's still out on where the heck that's going. But anyway, yeah. On Facebook and Instagram, you can find us at Once Upon a Geek Podcast. You're out on Twitter as well, correct, for now?
I am, yes, for now. It was recently purchased by the Master of the World, but I may remain. I'll see. I'm waiting it out.
So what's your handle?
It's Sean42AZ.
Perfect. It rolls right off the tongue. So folks, tag us out there. Share your thoughts. We want to hear everything that you're thinking. And remember, the most important thing is go out to our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com/onceuponageek, and leave your comments on the show post, because every fifth episode of Once Upon a Geek, I will read your feedback on the show. Now, if you're keeping track at home, this is the seventh episode, so you still got a little while so you got a chance to get your feedback in and get it read on the show. All right, so we are going to dive into why we love Alpha Flight in just a second, but first, we're going to take a quick podcast promo break, and then we're going north of the border.
You make that sound dirty. Do you remember your first comic book? Do you remember the first time you held a cover in your hand and you flipped the pages? You read the adventures of these amazing heroes? And you really fell in love with the medium. The first time you bonded a character to a team, to a company, and you knew, yep, I'm in this for life. Well, so do we. So join us on the never-ending reading pile from the Pulp to Pixel podcast network, where we proudly don our nostalgia goggles. We dive into our favorite comics, our favorite eras, our favorite characters, our favorite creators, and we just bask in the glory that is being a comic book collector. Come join us and help us chip away at the never-ending reading pile.
You're listening to Prairie Justice, a Greg Sanders vigilante podcast.
Is an exploration of the DC Comics character, the first superhero to use the name of the vigilante. First published in Action Comics 42 in September 1941, amid comics' golden age and carried as a continuous feature, during those years, the Vigilante was also a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory and was one of the first DC heroes to appear on the cinema screen in his own serial. Reappearing in the Bronze Age, the Vigilante had a 1970s renaissance throughout the DC universe. Greg Saunders, the Prairie Troubadour, leads a double life as a modern country and western musician, while also delivering justice throughout North America as a masked crime fighter, using the tactics and weapons of his rural Wyoming upbringing. With his friends Billy Gunn and Stuff Leong, many a nefarious scheme was foiled with six guns, ingenuity, a motorcycle, and a twirling lariat. Howdy, I'm Ranger Gord. Help me follow the trail of the Vigilante on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.
Siskoid's blog of geekery is Doctor Who,
Babylon 5,
animation,
comics,
toys,
Godzilla,
Star Trek,
cats,
crypto,
role-playing games,
battle shovel,
X-Files,
music,
podcast,
board games,
Jack Kirby,
alien,
movie,
nation,
kung fu,
dinosaur,
and so much more. Siskoid's blog of geekery, 10 years of content, more than 7,500 posts, still going strong at siskoid.blogspot.com.
All right, folks, we are back from break, and thanks to those podcast promos, I can now say I did manage to get a couple of Canadians on the show. Look at that. All right, so what we're going to do real quick, we're going to give a quick history of Alpha Flight, its publishing history. This is not intended to be like a Wikipedia entry. We're going to have a little commentary as we go, but just a sort of broad strokes of the history, because a lot of this, like, I didn't even know some of this stuff. As I'm researching this, I'm like, what? Mac and Heather had a kid? Huh? You know, like, there's stuff I learned as I was going. So we'll start all the way back in 1977. There was a little movie that came out that year, but that's not what we're here to talk about. So the all-new, all-different X-Men, number 109, first appearance of Weapon Alpha, which goes on, obviously, to be on Vindicator and Guardian, all that, you know, Mac. He comes to grab Wolverine and return him to Canada, and that is, you know, Chris Claremont and John Byrne probably having no clue what they're creating at that moment. As you said, it's just a throwaway moment, but wow, did it change our fandom. Then, a few issues later, in issue 120, Guardian comes back. This time, he brings along some friends in the name of Alpha Flight. You already described all that all got done, so I don't need to spend any time on it. Then, they get a few more appearances in the X-Men. They also show up in, like, Marvel 2-in-1 with some really bad art, Contest of the Champions, all kinds of places between 1979 and 1983. And then, besides another little movie about space in 1983, what else happens in 1983?
Well, what's really nice is in 1983, we get Volume 1 of Alpha Flight, also coincidentally the first time that Northstar and Aurora have the right hair color since their original appearances. Because if you have that Marvel 2-in-1 issue or the Crystar issue, yeah, they don't. The coloring is way off.
Isn't it like silver or something for a while, or white?
It is. It's like silver blonde. It's really bizarre. Oh, man. Yeah, they just don't get it right on any level. But Volume 1 starts in 1983, written and drawn by John Byrne. It runs until 1994, 130 issues.
That's a hell of a run.
That's a massive run for a team without a marquee character.
Yeah.
I mean, a team where literally Wolverine is their Alice the maid. Like, there's no... he's not a major part of the book, even though he's in the DNA of the book. But they last 130 issue. John Byrne is the initial creator. He writes and draws the comic for 28 issues. And then in an unprecedented turn of events, we get a creative team switch. I don't know another time in comics that this had happened, where the Hulk team at the time, which was written by Bill Mantlo, drawn by Mike Mignola, they completely switch with Byrne. He takes over Hulk. They take over Alpha Flight. And we get our second major run. In fact, the biggest run by Bill Mantlo. And Mignola is the main artist on that to begin with. But then we get Dave Ross, no relation. And then a guy named Jim Lee comes on board for a few issues and, you know, never gets heard from again.
Wasn't that his first, like, mainstream comics as well?
It was definitely very, very early, because I think he goes to Punisher War Journal.
Oh, yeah.
Right after that. And then that's, you know, then X-Men, and then that's where he takes off. So yeah, it's you know, it's really funny, because in the first, 45, 50 issues of that book, you have John Byrne, Mike Mignola, and Jim Lee drawing comics. Which might be another reason for its staying power. That's a pretty big imprint in the beginning.
I mean, that would be sad if the only thing that kept the book alive was amazing artists and not the characters. But I guess it's possible. I don't know.
It's got to be more, because there's some bad art coming.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just want to say about the Bill Mantlo run, and I'll have a few more things to say about it later, but just what a great growth for the characters. Like, he was handed Alpha Flight, which was John Byrne's baby. I mean, literally, beginning to end, he owned the characters. And Mantlo said, okay, you know what? I got this. Like, John didn't even get a chance to give him notes. Bill's like, nope, I know what I want to do. And Bill goes off and really took the characters in different directions. He grew the characters, transformed them, did a lot of cool stuff.
Well, it cracks me up, because if you hear Byrne's side of the story, he was really done. Again, he had never really wanted to write or draw this book, and he was very much done by the end. He was freely saying to everybody in the halls at Marvel, I'm out of ideas. I don't know what to do with this book. And so he likes to joke that he tricked Bill Mantlo into trading books with him. So he,
really?
Hulk, yeah. Oh, yeah. He plays it. If you read an interview with him, he's sort of cocky about it, that he's like, I tricked, you know, poor Bill into taking over. And I laugh about that every time, because I'm like, that is the Alpha Flight. Bill Mantlo era is one of the definitive eras of that book, and I would argue is better than Byrne's. And I'll talk about that later, but and I also think it's one of the feathers in Mantlo's cap. I mean, the guy did a lot of great stuff, but I think his Alpha Flight run is, you know, up there with everything. So Mantlo comes on board after Byrne, and we'll talk about his run in a little bit. And then we get the much maligned, though I'm really going to defend it eventually, James Hudnall and John Calamy run, which is about 20 issues. And this is really about Lan the Sorcerer, or Laloid from Ninjago. every time I read his name now, I can't help but say Lalan. And it's one long arc, but it's a story worth revisiting. I know you maybe don't have the best of feelings about the Hudnall era. Is that correct?
It's interesting. It's a run where he really tried to do some interesting stuff with the characters. He tried to make some changes and grow. And I don't run into this very often, where the story's okay, but the art is so incredibly bad. So bad, it made me hate the book. Like, not even just a little bit. Like, I did not want to finish reading it. I knew the stuff that was coming. I was excited about it. Like, I don't even want to read anymore. I hate this so much. And John Calamy, it's not that he's a bad illustrator. It's
no.
He's trying to, and get into this more than I probably should right now, but he's trying to emulate Steve Rude. And with the minimalist lines is what he's trying to do. Yeah, I've read interviews with him where he talked about that.
I can see that.
He's trying to emulate Steve Rude with the minimal amount of lines. Unfortunately, he doesn't have the skill that Steve Rude Subaru does. And it's just, it's very hard to read for me.
Yeah, he's a very young artist at that point. And I do, you can see the kernel of greatness in him, but it's rough.
Yeah.
And so Hudnall has a very lamented era where the sales drop precipitously.
Oh, yeah.
So they bring in some big guns. We get Fabian Nicieza writing the book fresh off of some great X-Men run. And some covers by that Jim Lee guy again. They dust him off. Michael Bear's on the pencils. And this is definitely a return to capital AF, Alpha Flight. It's Alpha Flight AF.
I was waiting. And, I knew there was going to be a reference somewhere.
Oh, it was coming. It was coming. We get Mac back. We get Guardian back. We get, you know, just a ton of pieces back on the board. We get some new characters like Windshear. And it's a fun if abridged run, which leads us to another.
Well, before you go, I want to say about the Fabian Nizia. I just want to say it's interesting. Like, when his first four issues was one storyline, that's where he brings back Mac. Like, it was clear that he was either told, you get four issues to make this work or you're out or something, yeah. Because he threw every single Alpha Flight, you know, nugget, trope, whatever you want to call it, as he could into the book. I mean, it is packed to the gills with Alpha Flight stuff. And it works. And it's fun. And it's great. It's just very crammed. And then it almost becomes like an ancillary FF book. Like, you get Dr. Doom, you literally get the Fantastic Four, you get Nova, you get Galactus, you get her, yeah. All this stuff. And it almost feels like, you know, at one point I thought, would he rather be writing Fantastic Four? Is what I was wondering. Or was it just, oh, he's doing this because of Burns' connection? I didn't know. But there was a lot of FF in the book, which is not a bad thing, but it was just interesting.
It's not. And it fits the milieu of the book, which is a writer who would rather be doing something else. And yet, in that tension created by a writer who'd rather be doing something else produces really good art.
Yeah.
So Nicieza writes the book for a bit, and then we get a very short, but I love the Scott Lobdell and Tom Morgan 9-issue run. It is fun superhero comics. It's the only time, one of the rare times Alpha Flight is ever fun, and it really is. Lobdell's bringing humor and a new energy to the book, and it is, I just wish that run had been longer, though we will get him back on the book not too long from now. I love it. Do you like that World Tour era?
The World Tour part, those last issues are the only ones I'm not a big fan of, but the rest of the Lobdell era was great. I loved introducing the Weapon Omega stuff.
Yeah.
He gives them all matching team uniforms, which I have pros and cons to say on that later, but he did something incredibly brave. You know, he took Northstar out of the closet. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It made massive news. It was, if I remember right, he was the first publicly gay superhero in mainstream comics, if I recall. And there's a lot, as you read it, there's a lot of problems with the way it happened in the comic. But you know what? It was well-intentioned, and they meant the best, and it needed to be done, and they were the first group that had the guts to do it, that Marvel would let them do it. So I think there's a lot to be said that it was a massively successful fumble, maybe is the best way to put it.
Yeah, and look, everything looks clunky from 25 years away.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with you. I think it was super brave for them to do it. You know, Byrne had laid the groundwork from the very beginning with Northstar that he was gay, but wasn't allowed by Jim Shooter era Marvel Comics to come right out and say it. And so it was nice that finally, after, you know, 106 issues, we do get that story told. And then the volume one of Alpha Flight is wrapped up by Simon Furman and Pat Broderick.
Simon Furman of Transformers fame?
Simon Furman of Transformers fame. And I'm surprised that's where you went. I was going to say Pat Broderick of Firestorm fame.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah, you know. And Broderick's art is delightful. I'm always a fan of his art. I like his art on this run, though it's, you know, a little bit tinged with horror because of the writing. But I think I said to you, and I stand by this, the Furman era is a little 2000 AD for me, and it doesn't play well with Alpha Flight the way I like it. So I can see why that's where it faded out.
The single word description of it would be joyless.
Yes.
It's trying to be 90s. It's trying to be 90s. It's trying to be edgy. It's trying to be raw, extreme, you know, and blood and gore. And it's trying to do all of that. And it's not succeeding. I don't want to say it's failing miserably, but it's not succeeding. And literally, I felt no joy as I was reading it. It was probably my least favorite era of all of Alpha Flight, I think. I hate to say.
Yeah. Yeah, it is for me. And also, it is a reminder that nothing good came from Infinity War. Infinity Crusade. Infinity War, the miniseries itself is good, but the crossovers for Alpha Flight are terrible. And Infinity Crusade produced what I will argue are the worst crossovers in Marvel Comics history. I won't say Infinity Crusade is the worst crossover event, because I think Secret Wars 2 proudly bears that badge, but Secret Wars 2 had fantastic crossovers.
Yes, it did.
They were amazing, and that is not the case here. So, yeah,
somebody should do a podcast about that.
They really should. It is a rough end to this Proud Volume 1, and you know, unfortunately, like my prostate, further iterations of Alpha Flight are going to get smaller and smaller. And so they are not going to 130 issues is as big as it's ever going to get. So that's Volume 1. What about Volume 2?
All right, so Volume 2, they jump forward 3 to 4 years later. It's 1997 to 1999. You get 20 issues, and it's all by one showrunner, Steven Siegel. And it's a very different sort of Alpha Flight. It's a team that's been reformed. They brought them back together. Half the team is veterans. Half the team are newbies. They're all working for Department H. But there's a lot of questions. Something is off. Something doesn't seem right. And it turns out, as you go through the miniseries, and actually you find out pretty quickly, but the characters take a while to find out, that the government agency, Department H, is corrupt. It is horribly manipulative. I mean, it is awful. And I'll talk a little more about it later. But wow. I mean, they are deeply embedded in this horrible organization. So the first 12 issues are drawn by Scott Clark. They're extremely 90s, but they're fun. You know, the way I think I described it to you was it's very 90s artwork, but it's not in the bad way. Is how I kind of described it.
Basically, if you like Gen 13 or Wildcats, you know, I think it reminds me a lot of Image House style, like kind of trying for Travis Cherist and not quite getting there, but still pretty good.
But then issue 12, Duncan, and I don't know how to say his name, Duncan Rouleau?
I've always said Rouleau, but I, you know, that's just my headcanon.
It sounds like a wine, so we'll go with that. He comes on board, and he has got an incredibly stylized style. I mean, folks, it's amazing. It is so stylized and so cool, and the art is amazing. I shouldn't say too much, because I got more I want to say about it later, but it is a gorgeous, cool book, and it just adds to the weird mystery flavor going on. Mm-hmm. And two interesting footnotes about this book. One is that issue 17 was supposed to premiere a certain team, but because of scheduling problems, it didn't work, these guest stars. So they ended up debuting in their own miniseries, a little team that went on to become known as Big Hero 6. Yes, the Disney sensation with Baymax that you can go hug at Epcot right now started in Alpha Flight. I shit you not, people. Honest to God, Big Hero 6 is a spinoff of Alpha Flight. It's insane.
It might be the most valuable issue of Alpha Flight ever.
It probably is. Well, that's the thing. They didn't make it into issue 17.
Yeah.
So they ended up in their own miniseries, which is Sunfire in Big Hero 6 is what it's called. Then they come back to visit. But either way, it's crazy. And the other thing is they actually tried to launch a Micronauts series out of this. They actually have some Micronauts appearances, which are near and dear to my heart. And of course, Bill Mantlo wrote Lowe's, so it's in the DNA of that. And they tried to launch a new Micronauts series out of it. They got pretty far along drawing the first issue until they found out they didn't have the rights to it. So,
yeah, I was curious about that because I was reading that issue in preparation for this. And I'm like, wow, they've got, you know, the Marionette, they've got Bug, they've got all, you know, all the characters you love. I'm like, didn't they lose the rights to those characters? Like,
yep.
Didn't they? And then, yeah. It was pulled out from under them pretty quickly.
There are out there in the world, there is an issue or two of Micronauts drawn by Carrie Nord that never saw publication. And I know where to find photocopies of those pages.
I love Carrie Nord, too. He did a great run with Carl Kiesel on Daredevil.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And that will be talked about on this show someday. So then jumping forward a bit, I'm just going to mention real quickly, because this is one of those where in my research I went, what happened? In 2003, in X-Men Unlimited number 45, because, you know, everyone kept up with that series, Mac and Heather have a child named Claire Hudson. I didn't know that happened. I guess I kind of remembered later, but like I didn't know when she was born. I didn't remember any of this. Were you aware of this? Was I the only one not paying attention?
Oh, no. I definitely do not remember the birth of this child. In looking at the cover of X-Men Unlimited 45, Snowbird and Jean Grey are on it, and it looks like it is a Phil Noto cover.
Yep.
I know I own this issue because I remember that Snowbird picture. I couldn't tell you a single thing about it. I didn't know that Claire was born. The first time I met Claire was in the 8-issue Alpha Flight miniseries you're going to talk about in a minute. And at that moment, I went, wait, they had a kid?
that's kind of how it all went for me, too. And then I found out in that series. Then I forgot about it until I was doing my reread. I'm like, they had a kid? And that's when I had to figure out what happened. So then we jump forward another year to 2004, and you get the all-new, all-different Alpha Flight, which it only went 12 issues. It's Scott Lobdell comes back, and he sort of showruns this one with artist Clayton Henry. And this is the series that most people choose to forget about because it's not the classic classic Alpha Flight at all. I mean, you do have Sasquatch in it and Nemesis, who's kind of like, you know, the not ready for primetime players. And after that, it's all new characters like Major Maple Leaf and Puck's daughter's in here. And like, I read this a long time ago and totally dismissed it. Like, oh, I don't like that. That's no good. That's not for me. Reread it, getting ready for the show. I totally missed it, dude. It is a Justice League International bwahaha yep. kind of vibe. The whole thing, its tongue is firmly planted in its cheek. It doesn't take it seriously. They break the fourth wall all the time. In fact, the first six issues is called You Gotta Be Kidding Me. I mean, they know what they're doing. They know this book is a joke. And once you accept that in your heart, that the book is a joke, it really works quite well. It's a fun read. It goes super fast. It's on Marvel Unlimited. You can read it in, I don't know, 20 minutes. It's fun.
It's fun, especially in retrospect. It wasn't what I wanted at the time. Like you, yep. I so missed my Alpha Flight, whatever that means. And I, you know, had misjudged the Siegel era at the time. I didn't like it at the time, though I've come to really like it later. And it had been just so many years. And then here comes this new Alpha Flight book. I'm super excited. Sasquatch is there. And yeah, it wasn't what I wanted. But in rereading it again, I remembered why I liked that brief Scott Lobdell world tour era of Alpha Flight so much. And he, you know, brings that same kind of, like you said, tongue-in-cheek, workplace comedy. And it's really a nice light treatment of characters that are usually treated too heavily, a.k.a. Simon Furman.
So I would tell you, folks, it's worth a reread. If you don't have Marvel Unlimited, you can probably just go out to your curb and you'll trip over copies of the trade paperback because they were everywhere. So then Brian Michael Bendis does the unthinkable and kills all of Alpha Flight in the pages of New Avengers. Thanks for that, Mr. Bendis. And that gives them a chance to spin off a new miniseries called Omega Flight, which came out in 2007. And this was by Michael Avon Oeming. Isn't that his partner in Powers?
Yeah, from Powers, yep.
Yep. And Scott Collins was the art on that one, which the art's really cool, by the way, on Omega Flight. It looks great. The problem is it's the spinoff of Alpha Flight nobody asked for, because it's a group of people that aren't even Canadians, really. I mean, it's like U.S. agent in what? U.S. Yeah. agent?
That's almost insulting.
Right.
It really is. Like, hey, we're going to start a new Canadian supergroup featuring, you know, Diet Pepsi Captain America. Like, that's just rude.
Beta Ray Bill's on the team, you know, Spider Woman. It's like, what?
Well, and don't forget, the other guy on the team is the guy who killed Alpha Flight.
Yes, that's right. And they put him in Guardians costume, too.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Super offensive.
So, and this all spun out of Civil War in the initiative. So, now it's not, we're bagging on it, but I seem to remember enjoying it. You know, it's like it was not the Alpha Flight anyone asked for, but I still remember thinking, you know, this is a fun miniseries. And again, Scott Collins drawing, yes, please, I'll take
always
more of
good.
That. Then, you know, in crossovers, they have a big crossover called Chaos War in Marvel, and they bring Alpha Flight back from the dead because that's what you do. And this led to what, sir?
So we get Alpha Flight Volume 4, which is a tie-in with Fear Itself. This is 2011. It's written by Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente, the team I love from the Incredible Hercules run. It's drawn by Dale Eaglesham, who's one of my favorite pencilers. And it is, you and I were talking about this, it starts off as a miniseries and then is announced as an ongoing, and then is announced as a miniseries. you know, Marvel, gotta love Marvel now. It lasts 8 issues, and this is definitely the most traditional Alpha Flight story.
Yeah.
In, you know, 20 plus years. It is the Canadian government. It's taken over by fascist dictators, or is just the Canadian government that's always existed in Alpha Flight. Let's be serious. It's backed by the Master of the World, and he's mentally converting people, including Heather Hudson. So the key conflict in the book is Heather and Mac fighting over their daughter, which feels very personal. Now, I know you like this book quite a bit because of the way it treats a couple of characters.
Yeah, so they took a lot of time to rethink Marina, because, I mean, they recognize that Marina is a waste of space, right? Oh. Everyone does. And Snowbird. And so Marina was completely redesigned from ground up, changed her personality, everything. She becomes like this angry teenage punk rock kind of girl who, like, her catchphrase is dies humans, or, like, you know, filthy human. It's like, it's always nasty, and it's all like pro-alien, anti-human, and then Max always like, you can't do that, you know. It's really quite charming and funny, and she is a likable character, and it's the first time they've ever done a story with her that didn't involve the Plodex. So that was a big win. And Snowbird, they physically spent a lot of time on that. They said, okay, here's what she looks like. How do we make her look better? That sounds terrible. But how do they make her more visually interesting without changing the costume? And they found ways. Like, there's this whole thing in the back of the comics where he talks about Dale Gisham, how he just kept adding volume to her hair, to her cape, to all these things to make her seem larger. And it really works. She looks cooler. She actually looks pretty sexy. And she's got a little bit of an edge to her. So I was glad they took the least interesting members and finally did something with them. So that was good.
It is the only time I've been even remotely interested in Marina. Mm-hmm. I always think of her as algae that floats on the top of a fish tank. Literally, both as a character and as a Plodex device, I cannot stand her. I would cringe every time she showed up in Avengers or in Alpha Flight. And it is literally the only time where I went, oh, okay, there are no bad characters. Like, right. If you put it in the hands of a caring writer, they really can do something with them. So, and it, you know, look, it's been 10 years, but that was a fun miniseries that, you know, gave me some hope.
It was really good. It was really good. And, of course, it went nowhere. From there, and I just found this out right before we started recording, they actually appeared in, like, 6 issues of the Red Hulk series by Jeff Parker and Dale Eaglesham, which okay. I have not read yet. And I just downloaded on my tablet. I'm like, ooh. I'm reading this. And then after that, because they didn't know where to stick Alpha Flight, they put him as part of the space program. So Alpha Flight becomes part of the space program alongside Captain Marvel. So along, Brie Larson. And they're defending the Earth in the Captain Marvel monthly book at that time. So they were fun stories, but when you really step back from it, you're like, why are the guys from Canada, you know, defending the planet from space? What? Well,
it makes no sense. I picked up some of these issues because I heard Alpha Flight was in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait, Aurora is piloting one of your spacecraft to fight aliens? Like, wait, what? Weren't there 8 billion more qualified people than Aurora?
Well, I would say worse, Sasquatch. Like, why do you need a giant furry guy flying a spaceship? Is it really, does it matter? You know, so that they do that for a while. But again, they're fun issues. I mean, they're mm-hmm. they're enjoyable to read. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Then there is this Gamma Flight group that gets formed in the Immortal Hulk. And that goes across many years, like 3 years. And then they get their own miniseries and stuff like that. Walter Lankowski forms this new team to go after the Hulk. And it's only tangentially with Alpha Flight. I mean, Puck is in it. And Walter Lankowski is in it. And then Leonard.
Doc Samson.
He actually becomes like a green version of Sasquatch and stuff like that, but it doesn't feel like an off-flight thing to me. No. I've only read bits and pieces, didn't do a lot for me. Maybe it's great. You guys tell me at home. Did you ever read any of that?
So the Immortal Hulk is phenomenal.
That's what I've heard.
Oh my God, it's Al Ewing, and it is a real horror, body horror take on the Hulk, and I love that series. Gamma Flight, I don't even see it as really Alpha Flight adjacent, even though okay. Puck is in it, but the Walter Lankowski that's in it is actually Doc Samson in his body. So it's okay. not even, yeah, it's a whole weird thing, but there's a body swap at one point. So, and actually weirdly, that's still in play. I just read it. I don't even know where I read it, but it was a recent issue where they talked about how the current Sasquatch is actually Doc Samson in Lankowski's body.
Okay. Well, there's a history. There's a precedent for that. So
no, there is. Yeah.
Then going back a little bit to 2019, probably the most prominent Alpha Flight was in a one-shot special called Alpha Flight True North. It was just a one-shot with a couple of stories. It was decent. I enjoyed it. And oddly enough, I bought it with you, sir. When I came to see you in Arizona, it was on the stands that day. So I bought it that day. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, that was awesome, man. You were out in Arizona and Dr. G and I met up with you. We went to our comic shop, which is a phenomenal shop. And I was like, there's the new Alpha Flight. And you're like, oh my God. Yeah. And you totally bought it. It was great. It was really, a nice little bit of serendipity. And there is there's 3 stories in it. It's definitely worth reading. The third story is actually a follow-up of the 8-issue miniseries. It's Heather and Claire, the daughter, and it follows up on that whole piece. So definitely there was an idea, and I think Greg Pak wrote it. There's an idea that they must have thought, oh, we maybe will follow this up with, you know, another Alpha Flight book, but it was 2019, and then 2020 came, and it killed any hope of a niche comic book, you know, that didn't have an X or a bat on the cover.
Didn't that story make Matt creepy again, too?
Yeah, which, in all fairness, has he ever been a good guy?
Okay, we're going to talk about this in a minute. Yeah. All right, so you know what? Here you go. I am going to throw you right now something I like to call, I've just made this up. It's my completely original idea. I'm calling it Secret Questions.
Ooh.
So I did not steal this from any other podcast about Secret Wars or anything. So I'm going to ask you a secret question. Is the team better with or without James McDonald Hudson?
It, unequivocally, without. That team got infinitely more interesting when Heather McDonald Hudson became its leader. First, powerless. She was the first ever powerless leader, I think, of a team, or who had never had powers.
I was gonna say Storm probably beat her, but yeah.
You've had leaders who had powers and lost them temporarily, but I think she was the first civilian leader. Maybe Candy Southern from the New Defenders, maybe they might have aligned somehow, but...
You'd have to ask the four people that read that book.
Either way, hey man, Moondragon, Hive Unite. Either way, she is a civilian leading the group. It is the group at its most dysfunctional. Mac was the kind of the spirit holding the group together, though I would argue in that original run, they're together in issue 1 and then in issue 11 and never in between. And he dies in 12, which, by the way, was my first issue of Alpha Flight. So you can
number 12?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You can tell why that book imprinted on me at a young age. My very first issue is them killing Captain Canuck. And so... So I definitely think Mac is more interesting in memory and as a shadow or a ghost hanging over the team and Heather than he has ever been on the page.
He's Barry Allen.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. That's exactly where I was going. Though, in fairness, Barry, and I mean, this is probably the first time this sentence has ever been said. Barry was a little bit more interesting.
What?
And Mac, I think, was way more interesting in retrospect. You know, seriously, the coolest thing he ever did was try to repair his suit and get interrupted by Heather and blow up. And so,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't think he's a great character. Now, I do enjoy, since he's been back, that they have given him a very dark undercurrent, including, and
I don't like
this.
It.
I do. I like this element, including one of my favorite little bits of retroactive continuity, which is he actually took Heather on their honeymoon into the wilderness of Canada in order to draw out a feral Logan so that he could look into him and maybe recruit him for Weapon X, leaving his young bride with him while he went off to get help. So Mac's a bastard and has always been a bastard. And I like that, but I think he's less interesting with the team. What about you?
Well, Manlow laid a lot of those seeds. I mean, he kept having Heather discover more evil stuff that Mac had done. So I would say really Manlow's the one who started that germ of that. You know, I can't even remember what it was. There was a whole storyline where there was an egg with a bad guy in it. And she discovered it. And I can't remember who that turned out to be now. I'm blanking on it.
He ends up, I think it's Bedlam. And he ends up taking out Alpha Flight for quite a while. It sends him into space.
Yeah. So either way, I agree. I think this works much better without Mac. I don't like Mac as the evil manipulator, but I like it without Mac. I think Heather as the leader is absolutely the right move.
Yeah.
And I think taking Mac out of the equation, whether Byrne meant to do it from the beginning or not, it was the absolute best choice to do. I mean, let's face it. That's the single story everyone remembers. I mean, there is no year one. There is no Dark Knight Returns. There is no story that everyone, you know, Long Halloween. There is no story that everyone remembers from Alpha Flight, except for number 12. I mean, that's it. So that's absolutely a great that they blew him up.
Yeah, I mean, Byrne literally takes the highest profile character, the guy who'd been in X-Men a few times, and you know is the single most visually identified member of Alpha Flight, and is like, yeah, he's dead. Yeah, like I'm just boom, he's gone, and then immediately slots Heather in, and so I love that about, and I do think there's a little bit of a creepiness to Mac from the start. Byrne has a weird tendency to for ages in his couples.
Oh, that's true. That's
and,
true.
You know, he's the one who retcons it so that Reed Richards is like a college freshman and meets Sue when she's like 12,
ooh,
which is weird. Not and nothing romantic happens between them till much, 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 much later. But still, it's weird. And then if you read Alpha Flight really closely, the first year of it, Heather's like 17. And Mac is an adult, like implied, like in his late 20s, maybe early 30s. And then she's barely 18 when they get together. So there is and that's more of a Byrne thing, John Byrne is on my Mount Rushmore of comic book characters that I wish never found the internet. And so you know, because if he hadn't, I would have loved him even more. But anyway, either way, you know, there's always been this undercurrent to Mac. And I understand the impulse to bring him back. But when you bring him back, you run into that problem again, the other problem of just duplicate power sets for him and Heather, you know, in the Vindicator and Guardian costumes. And it lessens Heather, who is by far the superior character.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Now, they did make some efforts to separate their powers later in the Steven Seagal run.
They did.
But still, yeah, I agree. The book's better without him. So let's get into one of our first discussion topics, which is the best runs of the book. What are, is your opinion, either your favorite or best runs of the book? Now, I am putting a caveat on here. I'm saying besides Byrne, because Byrne is generally accepted as the best Alpha Flight run, but you might have something different to say about that.
I will admit Byrne is, you know, the best drawn era, and it's the era that obviously sets the tone for the book. But the era where the most growth occurs for characters, where there's the most character development, there's the most attention to character, and I think in a lot of ways, an era that defines Alpha Flight even more than Byrne, because it takes elements of Byrne and dials them up to 11, is the Bill Mantlo era. Now, he writes the book longer than anyone else, mm-hmm. and he does something, and it's funny because as a young kid, I was really jarred when Byrne left and Mantlo stepped in, especially with Mignola on art. And I had an instant dislike for what they were doing, but I stuck with it out of kind of love for the book, and then eventually really hooked into it. And it wasn't until I was an adult where my podcasting partner, Greg Arujo, and I were talking one time, and I thought, oh, I wonder why I had such a violent reaction to Mantlo. And he goes, oh, because he was doing body horror. And I was like, oh my God, it never occurred to me that he's basically doing a Cronenberg. That whole run is all about your body betraying you and your body being sort of the source of your horror. Even in the villains like Scrambler, the mixed up man, mm-hmm. Madison Jeffries' brother, who can mutilate flesh and manipulate it the way Jeffries does metal, which is so grotesque. And it plays to the art, Jerry Talik on art and Mike Mignola. And if you look at that run, it's really split into two. It's 29 to 50, which is the traditional Universal Alpha Flight cast, and he's putting them through the ringer, but he turns Heather into Vindicator, and he fleshes out my favorite Alpha Flight character, Madison Jeffries, turns him into Box. And then at 50, he sends everybody away in a somewhat clunky manner. He sends all of them away. And in 51, the entire team is Sasquatch, but it's Wanda Langowski.
Right.
Not Walter Wangowski. We're missing. Something very important is missing. It's Heather as Vindicator. It's Madison Jeffries as Box, and it's Purple Girl. And we have yet to have the most important Alpha Flight member come, who we'll talk about in a little bit.
Oh, my God.
But don't diss Mannequin. But anyway, it's this tiny team that then grows with new members, and then there's that second, that's his second era. And so Mantlo definitely puts a really unique spin on the book. His lows are lower than Byrne, but across the length of his run, I think he does more for the characters, and I think he really defines it as a horror book, which is why we do get some of the stuff we don't love, like the Furman run. But I also think the Steven Seagal run is very much playing on how sinister the Bill Mantlo run is.
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I love the Mantlo era. It's my favorite era, along with Byrne, but it definitely, for me, if I really am, I think if I use a really critical eye, I think it just nudges Byrne.
Interesting. Okay, so first, I'll talk about Mantlo, then I'll talk a little about Byrne. And I picked three eras. I don't know if I'm putting you on the spot by saying, come on, step up your game and give us more, but we'll see.
Oh, I've got more.
Okay, so the Mantlo run for me, the thing I love about it echoing a lot of what you said, is the significant growth. The characters grow. And that doesn't usually happen in comics. Characters don't get to do that very often. You know, Heather grows from being, you know, the kind of leader of the team as a normal human, as you said, to Vindicator. Sasquatch, you know, you joked about Wanda. Folks, if you don't know the deal there, Snowbird dies. Sasquatch's mind goes into Snowbird's body, and that is the new Sasquatch. It is the one, it's the physical female body of Snowbird with Walter's mind in a white Sasquatch body. So you're dealing with all these transgender issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little clunky, you know, and the artists weren't helping by drawing them in like the sexiest leotards they could think of.
Oh, yeah.
But they were trying to tell a story. They were trying to say, what do you do when you're like, sort of, it's not body, I don't want to call this part body horror, but it's what do you do when your body betrays you, when your body isn't what your body's supposed to be?
Yeah.
Exactly. Then also people joining. You mentioned Madison Jeffries. Amazing addition to the team,
yes.
Especially what they did with Box. Box is absolutely one of my favorite characters. And in a lot of ways, it still feels like Byrne's Alpha Flight. It feels like a natural extension, so it feels like it's a natural piece with it, and I love that about it. For the body horror stuff, in addition to Scramble, there's also Deadly Earnest, which is all about back from the dead. You know, there's Pestilence, which is all about rotting and everything. I mean, there's a lot of that horror in there, and it's baked into the series, and it's really great. Now, if I was going to be critical of Manlow, I would say he stayed a little too long.
Yes. Yeah, very fair.
You know, we talked about how Scott Lobdell did the brave thing and outed Northstar. Well, Manlow tried to.
Yeah.
You know, he gave Northstar AIDS and was going to have Northstar either die from AIDS or at least be very sick with AIDS. And then this went on for months. I mean, you'll read all these issues where Northstar is in the corner coughing. And no, everyone's like, what's that about? You know, go take a Secrets or something, buddy. And once Marvel figured out what he was doing, they're like, oh, hell no, you're not.
Yeah.
And they screwed him over. And he had to develop this terrible storyline about how they're elves. It was awful.
I think that
probably took a lot of wind out of his sails. And then I think he got a little too enamored with his own Beta Flight characters towards the end, you know. And I get it, though. It's the era. You know, the New Mutants are huge. The kids in X-Factor are huge. The Teen Titans, you know, all these teams have kid characters. So I get it. I just felt like, okay, I like Purple Girl. I don't need any more stories with Goblin, please. You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So I love the Manlow era, though, and I will always stand up for it and say how great it was. And again, Mike Mignola, Jim Lee, oh, my God, yes, please. It was great.
Yeah, there's some amazing art. And to Manlow's credit, he changes with the art. When it's Mignola and Talek, it's a straight body horror book. He then gets June Brink Power Pack artist for a few issues.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jim Lee, and he makes it more sort of straight superhero. And I will say the thing that I think he deserves the most credit for is the elevation of Madison Jeffries, because Madison Jeffries is introduced by Byrne, and he's a sort of grizzled Vietnam vet who has the ability to manipulate metal, and he's an outsider, and he lives off the grid, and he's an interesting character, but Manlow transforms him. Some people don't like this. I do. Transforms him into a leading man superhero where he and Heather fall in love. He changes the Box armor into, after Guardian, I think Box is probably, you know, at a certain point in the late 80s, early 90s, he was the most recognizable member of Alpha Flight, because anytime you had a big Marvel crossover, he was on the cover. And so I really do think he gets a ton of credit for the development of Heather and Madison, who are my two favorite Alphans.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. So I'm going to talk about Byrne for a second, and then I want to hear your other runs that you might like. So I started by saying, why is it, you know, every other run but Byrne? And my thought is, why has it never been as good as Byrne? I think part of it's the art, because you can't compete with John Byrne's artwork in the 1980s. It's really like competing with George Perez's artwork in the 1980s. It's just like, it's that damn good. It's just, no one's going to argue it. It's that gorgeous. Also, the way he made you love the characters, it's sort of funny. We talked about how he didn't want to do the book, right? So for the first 12 issues, and you kind of joked about it with issue 1 and 11 there, but it wasn't a team book. It was about all these individual characters, and you follow the individual character. Like, here's a Puck story. Here's a North Star story. Here's an Aurora story. It's everyone's individual stories. So you actually got a chance to really know the characters in a team book. So while it was sort of a form of protest by Byrne, it worked. It worked in the favor of the book. So I think it really made you love the characters. So for me, I think that's a lot of why Byrne is so successful, and why, and he also had his stamp on it because he created him.
Yeah.
So I think it's, for me, as much as I love the other eras, I would agree with most people. I have a hard time saying eras are better than Byrne's because I don't know that I can.
And I think the thing that Byrne deserves huge credit for is the diversity of the cast. And you had talked about this, where you have two First Nation characters, right? You have Michael Tu Youngman and his daughter Elizabeth. You have Shaman and Talisman. You have an achondroplastic dwarf in Puck, who does not have superpowers under Byrne. He is just a man who has made himself into an acrobat and overcome this sort of crippling condition that brings him pain. You have a neurodiverse character in Aurora. You have a gay character in North Star. And actually, the least interesting characters in the book are the straight white men. James McDonald Hudson and then Walter Langowski. But even in Langowski, you have a subversion of the Dark Phoenix role, where in other books, a woman gets too much power, can't control it, and goes out, you know, spins out of control, has to be stopped. It's Walter in this book, who as Sasquatch has too much power, gets taken over by the Great Beasts, and has to be stopped. And so I'm fascinated by how diverse Byrne made this book, And then that is definitely continued by Mantlo, because you get, you know, an early transgender character in Wanda Langowski, and you get Laura, you know, Laura Dean and Goblin are not my favorite characters, but she's, you know, she's African American, and you get a much more diverse body of characters. And then even beyond being diverse in that manner, they're just the island of misfit toys.
Yeah.
They're all fundamentally broken in some way. And Byrne's like, hey, how much more can I break them? Like, let's see how much more they're broken. And that is super interesting, because it's not the shining pillars of the JLA or the Avengers. And it's not like the X-Men, where they're inherently good people who are being persecuted externally. It's Alpha Flight is they're all just really broken, and broken people draw broken people to them in this book. And it is fascinating how far he went with, like, oh, I'm not trying to make this a good person, or I'm not trying, like Shaman, for example, First Nation character, coolest power set ever. He has a bag of holding, right? D&D. And he, you know, pulls out magic stuff. Just awesome. Great costume. Great name. He's a terrible father.
Yeah.
He's a horrible father to Elizabeth, which results in her entire storyline. And so I just think it's really fascinating how Byrne built these characters.
So, all right, because I could talk about Byrne all day. I'm going to push you to, do you have another favorite era beyond Mantlo and Byrne?
All right, get ready, sir, because I am going to defend the James D. Hudnall era. Now, I'm going to listen, this is a much maligned era. It is widely considered the worst Alpha Flight era of all time, and I'm going to explain to people why they are wrong. So I'm going to make one big concession to start, and you talked about this. I won't beat it to death, but the art does not support the book. John Calamy is too young at this point, too inexperienced. He's trying to mimic somebody else, which I didn't realize until you said, but now I can totally see it. So one half of the book, like a really important part of the book, is failing. It is not carrying its weight. I would argue if you swap Calamy and Lee, or Calamy and Byrne, or Calamy and Mignola, the Hudnall era is remembered very, very fondly. There's even a young Mark Bagley on the last issue of his run.
Yes.
And I'm like, God, if Bagley had been on this entire run, this would have been amazing. So here's my defense. Byrne never wanted to write the book, barely has the team together, and then when he leaves the book, they're together, but they've just been destroyed by the Hulk. And you know, they're this non-team team, even worse than the Defenders ever were. It then comes Mantlo, and he puts the pieces back together. He builds the Alpha Flight team back, and then he tears them down at 50, and then builds his own kind of weirdo version of Alpha Flight, which is fun, and then leaves them kind of in a weird lurch. His final issue, presaging Grant Morrison's final issue of Animal Man.
Yes!
Yeah, in that a character talks directly to the writer in it, which is fantastic. And then Hudnall comes on, and he's left with a mess of a book. And over the course of about 20 issues, it's one big story that the Alpha Flight just fought the Dream Queen. And in defeating her, they shake the firmament, I don't know, side, you know, hand wavy, whatever. But they basically help release Lon the Sorcerer. And now this is not anybody who's fought Alpha Flight before, and he's not inherently super interesting.
No.
But historically, it's built in the book that he is a nemesis of whoever the talisman is, whoever's wearing the talisman. Well, at this time it's Shaman, but then it should be Elizabeth, his daughter, and she takes it over pretty quickly. And he's out to, you know, destroy the world. So it's one big sorcerer versus talisman story where she's using Alpha Flight for the, you know, the army of day, and he's using Gamma Flight and all these other and you know, people as his army of night, and they're all clashing, and he's kind of taking over people's minds, or he's, you know, adding a real shadow to their lives in a way that darkens them and their behavior. Is it great? No. Is it really focused? Yes. And it does a few things so well that I think it deserves real credit. One, it puts all the pieces back on the playset.
Yes, it does.
By the time Hudnall's era ends and Nisieza comes in, Northstar and Aurora are back. He's back from Asgard. She's back from nunnery. We've got Puck back. We've got Heather as Vindicator. We have Sasquatch back in his body. He's the orange Sasquatch. All the pieces are back in play. And that's, I think, the sign of a good writer. He understands, hey, people want Alpha Flight. I'm going to build Alpha Flight back. And he takes 20 issues of story to do it. He doesn't just magically wave a wand and they're the team everybody loves again. He puts the pieces back in play. Two, he develops my favorite relationship in Alpha Flight, which is Madison Jeffries, the love triangle between Madison Jeffries, Heather Hudson, and Diamond Lil.
Okay.
Now, Diamond Lil was from Gamma Flight. She was recruited for Omega Flight. She's part of the group that helps kill James Hudson. And then she just shows up on Madison's door when she gets out of jail. And they had a thing way back when. And she's like, can I crash with you? And she's definitely trying to get him back. He's engaged to Heather. And then it's kind of on again, off again. And then the two of them end up together. I love that love triangle. I think it's really interesting. And then three.
Well, I got to comment on that real quick. At first, okay. I was frustrated with that because, like, Diamond Lil goes from, hey, I tried to kill Guardian and kind of helped do it, and now I'm on the team. I mean, it just happened a little too quickly for me.
Yeah.
And the love triangle thing bothered me at first. Like, he's engaged to Heather. Why is he screwing around with this other girl? Until it finally clicked, oh, Madison Jeffries was her rebound guy. Yes. He wasn't the guy she was supposed to marry. Okay. Yeah. And then I was fine with it. So yeah, I like the Diamond Lil, Madison Jeffries relationship. It just took me a while to get on board.
I like it too for one of the reasons you said, which is he even looks like Mac. And so he is definitely her rebound guy. And she's settling. Madison is not in her league.
Right.
And she's settling a bit. And Diamond Lil calls him out for that. She's like, wait, you're engaged to Heather Hudson? And he's like, yeah. She's like, isn't she a little out of your league? Like, like, I'm kind of the girl you should be with, not her. And I think over time, Heather realizes he's a rebound guy, and Madison realizes, oh, I was just so flattered she would be with me that I don't actually maybe really even love her. I like, you know, I'm with Lil. So I like Diamond Lil a lot. So I love that character arc. So puts all the pieces back on the table, writes a great love triangle, and then he plays the Acts of Vengeance miniseries, I think, better than almost anybody else. Because what he does is he says, okay, I'm going to take these random Marvel villains, but it's the Sorcerer, it's the main bad guy, who's going to set them up to fight Alpha Flight because violence increases his power and it allows him to do more of what he needs to do. So I found the Acts of Vengeance stuff really clever under his run. And then in the pockets where he had good artists, which are the last like three or four issues, especially Mark Bagley, you really saw what that book could have been if he had been given support on art. And so through all of that, I think he deserves way more credit. It's a one villain focused story that has a bunch of little sub stories in it, which I always think is a lot of fun. It builds the team back. It adds Diamond Lil to the mix, which is fun. It adds Talisman back. And everything that follows after can only follow after because he's in story rebuilt the team. So there, that is my defense of the James Hudnall era.
I will say in response to that, one, the book you described, I wish that is what I had read, not what I actually read. And two, that's 20 minutes of my life I'm never getting back.
Oh,
so. I remember I picked up Alpha Flight number 75 off the shelves and I thought, okay, you know, everyone loves Alpha Flight. I'm going to read. Oh, it's a big anniversary issue. Oh my gosh, yeah. Spider-Man's on the cover. Hulk's on the cover. I remember finishing it and saying that was literally one of the worst comic books I've ever read in my life. And I am not going to argue with anything you said because, yes, there's absolutely a lot of diamonds in the rough in that run. So I'll talk about one of my other favorite runs. So is probably the most innovative run, the run that I feel like did the most interesting stuff was the Steven Siegel run. Again, the artists were Scott Clark in the first half and Duncan Rouleau on the back half. It's amazing artwork. And again, I like the 90s stuff, but then when it's Duncan Rouleau, it's so stylized. Like Puck has this giant freaking mustache and he's just this round and chunky. And I mean, he has never looked as cool as he did there. And there's this incredibly creepy manipulation vibe going on the whole way through it. Like Heather and Puck are pretty much the only original members of Alpha Flight on the team. You don't know that when you start. You think there's more than that, but they're the only original ones on the team. And from issue one, Department H keeps screwing with them, like mind wiping them. Like we're talking Zatanna identity crisis level mind wiping, like totally changing their memories, messing with them, convincing them of all these different things. You know, there's clones running around. The Department H is stealing kids, superhero kids, and raising them in orphanages. You know, people know each other and don't even realize they know each other because their minds have been messed up. It's a whole bunch of intrigue. There's a whole bunch of superhero action. There's a lot of mystery and there's gorgeous artwork. And I just feel like it was 20 issues of pure joy for me. It's not the Alpha Flight you remember because it's dark and creepy, but there's just something about it. Now, you just recently reread it, right?
Yeah. So I did not enjoy this run when it came out in the 90s. I wanted Alpha Flight back. I wanted my Alpha Flight back. And I had, you know, the Furman run had petered out for me. And so I felt like it had been a long, long time since I had seen the team that I loved and recognized. And so when that book came out, I could not have been more excited. I liked Clark's art, even though it was very Image. Again, it was kind of Travis Cherris, you know, style, and I liked it. I was interested in the first issue because, I mean, basically Puck and Heather start questioning Department H. Department H shoots them, tranquilizes them, and then brainwashes them. And you're like, oh, wait, what? And that's issue one. And so I was interested in it, but for some reason it was too, at the time, it was too far apart from what I wanted.
Okay.
And I didn't latch into the style. And so I gave up on it pretty quickly. And then you actually were like, hey, this run is really good. And so I'm like, all right. So I gave it a read and I really did. You were right. I really enjoyed it. There's a narrative technique that I didn't like when I read it in the 90s that I really like now, which is the narrator is effectively speaking to you.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking to all the characters in a really sinister and sort of malevolent way. Like there's issue 12, somebody's going to die. And the entire book, he's like, is it going to be Heather right now? Is it going to be Puck? Is it going to be, oh, it looks like it's going to be Puck. And you're like, wait, no, don't kill Puck, you know. And so there's definitely a... I like the government as the bad guy in the book, and I like how sinister the whole piece is. And then I just like there are some really clever surprises, like the ultimate revelation of who Sasquatch is.
Yes,
is really funny. Like it's really clever, and the fact that no one ever picks up on it makes it even funnier. And so I really came around to it. I will tell you, it is now one of my favorite runs.
That's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that.
It reminds me, for people who read comics, modern comics, it reminds me of Kieran Gillen and what he's doing in Eternals right now, where like you just cannot, it's a book led by an unreliable narrator. You cannot trust anything and it's really fun.
That's awesome. That's a wonderful endorsement. Okay. The sad part is it's not a Marvel Unlimited. It's not reprinted anywhere. I don't know why. It's only 20. It's 21 issues technically because it's the 20 issues plus the negative one issue, which is funny because they did the negative one month in Marvel, right? Where everyone got a negative. And that was actually how they had to launch the book.
Yeah. Because it was the first issue of it.
Right. Which is such a weird way to do it. But it was nice because it actually, the negative one sets up the Mac and Heather romance, which is really key through the whole story, so it worked really well. So I love that run, and I wish more people would read it. So go find it, check it out. I think it'll be well worth your time now that you know what you're getting into. So
yes, yeah, and it should have been subtitled "Eunice the Untouchable, Not So Untouchable."
Oh my gosh!
Because that man is just dropping kids all across the country, all across the Canada.
Well, and there's a whole bunch of stuff left wondering too. Like there's certain plot points. Like for example, we found out, well, yes, one of the kids was Eunice's kid, but we never did find out who Flex was the kid of.
Yeah.
Like he's like, hey, I know who my parents are, and they never let him say.
Nope.
So
no.
Anyway.
But that all that whole house, that like evil orphanage.
Oh my gosh!
Really creepy. Really good.
Yeah. And if you said you're rereading it, I would, even though we're finishing this episode, I would recommend you finish it. If nothing else, just for the art, it's so incredible through the whole thing.
If you like Duncan Rouleau, you should check out his Metal Men miniseries.
I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's my favorite work by him.
So good. So good. All right. I've got one more run to mention briefly. Do you have any more?
I think I probably have taken all available space in defending James Hudnall, so go ahead.
Okay. I'll just very briefly say, if you love the classic Alpha Flight by John Byrne and you want more, then definitely check out the Greg Pak, Fred Van Lente, Daigle Eaglesham era. It's technically 9 issues. Again, with the screwy issues, it's a 0.1 issue. Marvel did 0.1 issues because 0 issues weren't enough.
Yeah.
So, but it's a 9-issue story. It was first tied into Fear itself, and that kind of goes away halfway through. But, I mean, Daigle Eaglesham's artwork, oh, damn.
He's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, it was great on Fantastic Four. It's great here. His figures, his details, the thought he puts into the design. I mean, I talked about Snowbird earlier. Just the thought he put into adding volume to her character to make her physically look bad. And it works, you know. You know, I was reading it during the election, by the way, rereading it here. And the whole fighting against the fascist corrupt government was like, whoa. Uh-huh. You know, so many, you know, and people in the two different sides fighting and everything. You know, the political parties fighting, like, wow, okay, this is a little scary. But it did tell a new story,
yes.
But it felt classic at the same time. time. So it's the best modern update of the classic team, I would say.
And I would just honorable mention Chaos War, the crossover event, which centers on Incredible Hercules by Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente, is where Alpha Flight is brought back to life after Bendis kills them literally off screen. And sorry, I'm still angry about it.
I know.
It's a really fun read. And there's a really fun moment where Snowbird joins Hercules on a journey into the afterlife of the gods to try to fight the Chaos War, the Chaos King. And Snowbird is trying to help Hercules get his mind back. So she shows him a image of all of his lovers. And North Star is there. And she looks and she goes, Jean-Paul, what are you doing here? And he goes, oh, and he speeds off. It's amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
Hilarious. It's really funny, but it's also, again, probably my favorite Snowbird story ever. So definitely worth reading.
Okay. Chaos War was not necessarily my bag. I tried some of it, but I do know there was the special where they came back. Oh, there was. Oh, the thing I thought was interesting, though, is wasn't that the story where they made Puck like a warrior or a king of hell or something like that?
Yeah, there's some weird stuff, but, you know.
I'm not knocking it. It was fun because it was funny the way they reference it later. Puck's like, yeah well, you know.
He's just king of hell for a little while. No big deal.
Oh, I love it. All right. So those are some great runs, folks, for you to check out. So question for you here is Alpha Flight, the comic book, right? It's had it very high highs, very low lows. As a comic book, what do you feel like Alpha Flight creators did right? What did they do wrong? And what could they do to make the next book, you know, as if there would be one, successful somehow nowadays? So I'll let you, why don't you cover your do, I don't know, whichever you want, do rights or do wrongs, and then I'll cover some of mine.
So I think the thing they do right, and I hit on this earlier, is in presenting very flawed characters, because it makes them more interesting, and it gives a potential for growth that isn't there in some other characters. Now, not to say that there aren't awesome Captain America stories, including the current Captain America book, which is fantastic, but Cap's a hard character. You almost have to focus more on the people around him and how they react to him, because he is such a complete character. The characters in Alpha Flight are really broken fundamentally, and so they make very interesting heroes because they should have gone the other direction. And so I think the thing they always get right is the understanding that broken characters make for great stories. The thing they think they get wrong is when they don't focus enough on character, when they make it about everything but the characters, and when they just play the greatest hits. I don't need another Great Beasts story. I could go the rest of my life without the Master of the World, and I've yet to read a good Plotix story, so I certainly don't need them brought back. And so I definitely think this is not a greatest hits team. We don't need comics about comics when it comes to Alpha Flight. We need what Pak and Eaglesham were trying to do, which is move the team forward because they're already great characters. Let's just put them in some new stories. What about you?
I want to comment on two of those things real quick. Is the as far as the greatest hits. So as far as I'm concerned, I mentioned earlier, the greatest Alpha Flight story, the most renowned Alpha Flight story is Killing Mac, right?
Yep.
So one thing they have done so many times is bring Mac back from the dead. They kill him and they have done, I counted four times the man has come back from the dead now, which is ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
Stop already. You know, it's sort of the greatest hit. Stop it already. No more of that. And just leave him dead at this point. I don't ever want to see him again. Although I think technically he's alive right now, but fine. Just make him go away. We don't need him anymore. As far as sort of what you were saying about the broken people, there's another aspect of that I really love, which is the inner character conflict.
Yes.
They are always bickering. Always. Yes. I mean, North Star is a prick. I mean, he is always pissing off people. There's entire issues where his goal is like, you know what, today I am just going to go piss off Sasquatch because he is sleeping with my sister. So I'm going to make that guy as mad as I can. And that's what he's doing. And I love that about him. He's always arguing with the leader. And it makes him a jerk, but more of it, please. Keep that going. I loved seeing a character's not get along. It makes a more interesting story.
Well, and there's such balance because North Star is that character who's like, whose skin am I going to get under today? But then there's this great moment in 29, it's the first Mantlo Mignola issue, where they think Walter's dead. They think they've lost him as they're trying to get him a new body. And Aurora and Northstar break down.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at him and she goes, "You're crying?" And he's like, and he can't speak. And she goes, "Oh, you loved him too." And so there are these great moments of balance of like, it's not just, oh, he's a jerk character. He's a jerk character because, you know, he's a gay man who has to be closeted because of the time period. He's a mutant who has to be closeted because of the time period. He's, you know, all the things that he is and he should be proud of, he's not allowed to proclaim and be proud of. And so you see great evolution where he was recently the main character in an X-Factor run in the Krakoa era of X-Men by Leah Williams and David Baldeon. And he was amazing. Still cocky, still haughty, but more of the great part of him too, which was really cool.
Haughty is a great word to describe him. It really is. Wow. Okay. I've got a bunch of do rights, do wrongs.
Okay.
So I'm going to run through them. You chime in as we go through this. Great thing I mentioned earlier, Byrne taking a year to just focus on individual characters. Absolutely did that right. Even though it was just a protest against having to write a team book, it was exactly the way to go to make us care about the characters. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Killing Mac. We've already talked about this. I don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but that was actually the right thing to do. It was perfect idea. Glad they did it. I'm glad they eventually drifted away from representing Canada for every character. Like, you know, I think Box was the first time that we saw a major character in Alpha Flight. We're like, oh, how does that connect with Alpha Flight? I don't know. It's automotive industry? I don't know. But like up until then, every character was so clearly, you know, some aspect of Canada that eventually they started introducing characters, you know, Purple Girl, things like that. That's not distinctly Canadian. It's just a cool hero who happens to be from Canada. And yeah. I'm glad they finally did that. Let's see, I already talked about Lobdell taking Northstar out of the closet, which was, again, courageous. Artistic choices. So this is an interesting one for me. So in Volume 2 and 3, as much as I don't like Mac being around, it's a reality, he was, but they did something where when Mac and Heather were together, they put Heather in a green version of the flag uniform, and it looked really good.
It is. It's a cool costume.
Yeah. It was a great choice, and changing her powers to the volcanic powers and things like that, where she dealt with geothermal powers. It's like, I thought that was a really smart move, and I thought that was clever. Then a move that was started good and then can work very badly is the evil Department H. When it's done right, like for example in the Steven Seagal run, it's brilliant. It's amazing. It's a great thriller era. You make an evil Department H in a straightforward superhero comic, not so much. It gets to be real repetitive after a while. So it's walking a fine line there.
It does, but I have to say it has long tendrils because the Weapon X program that creates Wolverine effectively is Canadian.
True.
So there is a long history of the Canadian government really abusing their superpowered population. And then even a later Weapon X comic, which was terrible, by Frank Thierry, there's a whole mutant concentration camp in Canada. And so it's interesting because Department H has never had clean hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get why people keep going back to that well, because historically it's been a very corrupt organization. And Alpha Flight's relationship with the government has been very corrupt. I mean, basically, Henry Peter Gyrick would be their best government liaison ever. Like, that's how bad their government is. And so I definitely can see why people keep going back to it. But you're right. We've had an entire volume devoted to it. It may be time to move on.
Yeah, there's got to be a different nugget there somewhere. Yeah. Then on the do-wrong side, I've got a few. I've mentioned quite a bit already. But Aurora always losing her sanity. Like,
yeah,
it makes a great story sometimes, and it should be addressed, but every story or every arc doesn't have to be about that. You know, they did an interesting thing in the, I guess it was in the Hudnall era where it ends, but then it picks up in the Nicieza era, where they made her sort of a nun of sorts, where she kind of is trying to use her powers as a pacifist, which I thought was an interesting turn.
I did too. I'm a little done with the Madonna whore dichotomy of her.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, like Jean Marie is pure and Aurora is, you know, a whore. That got a little old. In the, you know, more modern era, because she's in the X books, they've actually had them befriend each other. Like, they've had the two, and she's got more than just two now. Like, they've kind of really looked at what dissociative identity disorder is,
mm-hmm.
and they've given her a more realistic version of it. And so she's actually, like, currently she's in a place where Jean Marie and Aurora are actually trying to work together. So it's pretty cool.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I will trust you on that. I have to mention, just because I'm irredeemable, in that Nicieza era when Michael or Bear, yeah, Bear was drawing
Michael
it.
Bear, yeah.
There's this weird conflict of like she was if I remember, she was only the nun personality. I don't think the crazy Aurora person I was around, but she was in the sort of the nun thing. And every time he drew her, it was some exaggerated butt shot, because it's like you know, here's this really pure, wholesome woman who's all about the purity of things, and oh, there's her butt. So that was a little weird.
She was like a nun on Halloween. Yeah, she was definitely a slutty nun.
Scott Lobdell, I loved it when he put everyone in the Canadian flag uniforms,
yes.
And I hated it at the same time.
Really? I love them. Oh my God, I live for a matching uniform set on a team. I loved X-Factor's uniforms at the time. I love when the New Mutants all wore the training uniforms. I love their white and red Alpha Flight uniforms. I am a sucker for everybody in a matching uniform.
I love everybody in a brown jacket. I do.
Oh, me too.
But in this case, it looked cool, but then when it kept going for so long, it just became too homogenous, especially and maybe this is some of my problems with the Furman Scott, the Simon Furman run. I don't know, but just after a long while, it's like, you know what? They need more individuality after a while, and I did struggle with that. So, all right, so those are the do right, do wrong. So, all right, you're in charge, okay? You're in charge of having to as an editor, you've got a team who's going to be doing the Alpha Flight book. What do you charge them to do to make sure the book goes right? And I'm not saying you have to give me a plot, or whatever, but what is it that as an editor you go, okay, guys, look, make sure you do these things, otherwise the book's going to go south.
So I make it a character-focused book with big four color superhero action. I want it to be character focused. I want them to still be, the Island of Misfit toys, but I want them to also be the last line of defense for this country. And I think there could be a very interesting tension in not a corrupt Department H like we see in the Steven Seagal run, but more of a, what does it mean to be the official superheroes of your country? When is that a line you won't cross? When does that become a, hey, are we doing this mission politically? And am I comfortable with this? And when is it, oh no, I'm actually serving my country and my people? So I think I would play it again. I wouldn't want to lose the characters, but I do think where Alpha Flight gets bogged down sometimes is when it gets too great beasts and repetitive. I do like to see them fighty fight fight, and I'd like to see some big superhero action. What about you?
A lot of similarities. One of the specific things about the big action is create some new interesting villains.
Yes. Oh my God.
Ones that aren't just one shots.
Dude, Justin Trudeau is just sitting right there. There you go.
Gosh. Develop some new bad guys that can come back, reoccurring bad guys that work that isn't the ones that we're going to talk about in a second here. Yeah, absolutely. Got to be Heather leading the team. Yeah. You don't even mess around with Mac. And I think the what we've seen from a couple of different further iterations, I like the composition of some veterans with some rookies. I think that works well. I think that would be a good idea. And make them the premier team. There's been so many iterations of Alpha Flight where they're on the skids, or the media's out to get them, or they're in trouble, or the government's after them, whatever. Make them the Avengers of Canada. Give them a ton of money. Give them a ton of respect. And let them run. I mean, I loved that building they had in
The Seagull era. That was super. It was like Triskelion.
I think it was introduced during the Bear era, actually. But yeah, they just kept it going. That giant era with it looks like a CD-ROM on the side of the building. Yeah. That was the closest where they actually had funding and everything. Yeah, give them that. Make them the premier team and show it. And you kind of said it. Make it what that means to be the premier era of that country. So yeah, I agree.
I would play up two more elements. Sorry, you triggered something. One, keep the soap opera stuff high. I love a good love triangle. And two, one of the things that makes Alpha Flight truly unique is that it's Alpha Flight. And there's a Beta Flight and a Gamma Flight. There are multiple levels to this system. There's a newbie era in Gamma, and there's a trainee era in Beta. And make the book about them too, about how Beta's not quite ready and why aren't they quite ready, and how Gamma's raw and new and maybe a little bit out of control. And so I think that separates them from other heroes.
The only difference is I would insist on having a red pen and strike through any of the Beta or Gamma Flight characters named Goblin or Mannequin or anybody else who's useless. So,
stay away from Whitman.
We're almost there. We're almost there. And I would insist on a superstar artist because seen what happens to the book when it does not have a strong lead artist. It suffers badly. It almost gets canceled.
Yeah, and I would love to see Jed MacKay. He is my favorite writer at Marvel right now. He writes. He wrote the Black Cat series, which is phenomenal, and he's writing Strange, which is about Clea Strange. She's the Sorcerer Supreme. That guy can do no wrong. He's also writing Moon Knight. Moon Knight is a character I only read if I like the creative team. He's not a character I'm drawn to naturally, and I love this Moon Knight book. It's my favorite Moon Knight book ever. Jed MacKay is amazing at crafting old school superhero with a totally new twist. Makes you see characters in a way you've never seen them before, while honoring who they've always been. So I would love to see Jed MacKay on the book. And then you said superstar artist or big artist. Trying to think who's currently at Marvel. I just want whoever it is, I want them to be clean. Kind of, you know, like Burn. Like not I don't want a Burn clone, but I'd love somebody in that style of like very crisp, clean, four color art.
Well, I'll tell you the three people I came up with. They're not modern at all because I'm old school. I don't read a lot of modern comics. So Daily Eaglesham did a fantastic job. I would love to have him back. He's still out there in the industry. Or someone like a Tom Grummet.
Yes.
Tom Grummet's a great Burn kind of spiritual successor, you know, I see. Or a Mark Bagley. Any of them would be fantastic on the art, I think. As far as writers, I lean old school. So the people that came to my mind was like Jeff Parker. I think Jeff Parker does a great job writing big action and fun and great dialogue. I love Jeff Parker. Mark Waid or Carl Kessel or Peter David. Those are all names that came to mind for me. And then it's funny, I came up with that list, you know, especially like Jeff Parker and Dale Eaglesham. And then I found out that, yes, as I mentioned earlier, they had written Alpha Flight in the Red Hulk series. That's probably the reason I'm so excited to read that. I'm dying.
There's so many. I'd love to see like Nicola Scott. She's got style. There's so many good people. I think if you put on this book, I think there's an appetite for it because there are so many fans of this book. I mean, there's just so many people who live and died by this book. And then the truth
but apparently won't buy it. So,
well, the truth is you can get people to get interested in it again. Cause if you go into any discount bin in the country, you could put a run of the Burn book together right away. Like
that's true.
And I don't think it's funny because I don't think it's that people don't love the book. I think it's just Marvel overprinted that book by so many copies that you can find the entire Burn run for like, you know, $12.
Well, and everyone also bought it and then they dumped their collection eventually.
Yes,
yeah,
that's true.
I'll throw my second secret question at you, sort of tied into that. Why don't more people love Alpha Flight? I mean, obviously enough people don't love it to support a series nowadays because they even, you know, again, that Dale Eaglesham series, it was going to be a monthly and new initial sales orders from previews said, no, it's not. So why don't people love Alpha Flight more?
You know what I think a big impediment is to the book? The name.
Really?
I think it's such an odd name. If you're not steeped in Marvel history and you're just perusing the shelves, you've got a lot of brand recognition. You've got Spider-Man, Iron Man, Superman, Batman, you know, Justice League, Avengers, and then you're like Alpha Flight. Like that sounds like a trucking company. Like that sounds like, you know, a Canadian group of semis or something, you know, that go across the country. Like I think the name is a big detractor. I just don't think it has panache. I love it because I love the book and I love the history behind it. But if I'm a newbie and I'm looking at the racks, it's not jumping out at me. It's not sexy in any way. And then I also think the lack of a marquee, you know, recognizable character where you can pitch any X-Men book if you've got Wolverine on the cover, and you can pitch any Avengers book if you've got, you know, Thor or Iron Man or Cap on the cover. And so I think the lack of a super recognizable main character is why we do see Wolverine in the book maybe more frequently than he should be.
Interesting. Okay. I don't really have a good answer for it. I'll comment on yours though, so what you're saying is it's clearly with its name recognition and lack of character, it's no Forceworks then.
Well, I mean, what is?
Right.
You know.
Okay. Yeah, I see it. Speaking of other worthless things. So, all right. So Alpha Flight, they've got three quote unquote major bad guys that reoccur the most frequently. That's the Master of the World, your beloved, the Grey Beasts, and the Plodex alien species. The question I put to you, sir, is does Alpha Flight have any other villains that are worth a damn?
Yes. In fact, you did not name the main villain.
The main villain
of Alpha Flight is Alpha Flight.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Jim Shooter. Okay.
No. Alpha Flight, and I'm stealing this from my buddy Dr. G, they're the Doom Patrol of the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
They create 99% of all of their problems and battles. I mean, the Great Beasts come to Earth in large part because Snowbird is here.
Yeah.
Pestilence comes to Earth because Shaman is here. We get the Hulk brought back to the planet because they go fishing in the Nexus of All Reality.
Literally, yeah.
Literally, for a body for Walter Langowski. Sasquatch goes crazy because he was messing with gamma radiation. Puck had a magic genie inside of it, which I don't want to talk about too much. But basically, they are their own worst enemies, and they create the majority of their own problems. So I actually think one of the things that is most interesting about Alpha Flight is that the main villain of the book is Alpha Flight.
That's hysterical. That is absolutely hysterical. I did not see that coming. Yeah, I'm going to rattle off, just so you guys know. This is the list of villains I put together for us to review. These are the most reoccurring villains. And you guys tell me if you hear any superstars in here. You know, again, Master of the World, Great Beast, Plodex. Then you get Deadly Earnest.
He's awesome.
I like a lot of these, okay? But I'm just saying, they're not superstars. You know, they're not going up against the Avengers. They're going up against, you know, the Force Works of Canada is what they're doing. Gilded Lily, you know, Pink Pearl, Scramble, Razor, Dream Queen, Lalonde the Sorcerer, Pestilence, General Clark of Department H, the Brass Bishop. Yeah, none of these are majors, but I will say, out of that list, and again, there's a million more, but you know, you mentioned one earlier, Bedlam, I completely forgot about. I would say the ones that I feel like had the most opportunity to become something, maybe, if handled differently, would it be Pestilence. I thought Pestilence was really interesting. He was the guy who was buried under the ice alive for hundreds of years and came back as a magical evil spirit of rot. That was pretty interesting. I think the Dream Queen, this sorceress who controls this whole other dimension, and she's got her eyes on taking over Earth, is kind of interesting. It could be done really well. You got to remove, though, Goblin and Laura Dean. I never want to see them again.
I'm not a fan of those characters, especially Goblin. But
yeah.
The other cool thing about the Dream Queen is she's Nightmare's daughter. So there's a tie to Doctor Strange.
That's right. She is. And Jim Lee, if I remember right, was the artist who was drawing her at the time. Is that right? Or am I?
He does the cover.
Oh,
he does
okay.
Some of the issue. I think he does like maybe the first issue, but it's mostly Calamy. But but Jim Lee does the cover, that very famous intricate Dream Queen cover. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other best villain has been Department H.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about why that's good or bad, but I mean, that's the other probably best known villain. So that's why, again, if I was the editor, my first job would be to tell them, come up with some new villains. So
yeah, definitely. We don't need more comics about comics for Alpha Flight.
Yeah. best members and worst members of the team. So as best rapid fire as you can, best members of the team, and then we'll do worst.
So I'm going to go top three. My top three favorite members of the team. One is Madison Jeffries.
Mm.
I have a super soft spot for that character because he is the star of the Mantlo run.
Yeah.
And because he becomes sort of the leading man, and Box is a cool character. And that ability to control metal is really cool. He goes some interesting places once he leaves Alpha Flight and becomes part of the X-Books, including having an affair with an artificial intelligence. That's really...
This is all news to me. Okay.
Fascinating. Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, not just any artificial intelligence. It's the Danger Room. He has an affair with the Danger Room. So... I'm not joking. So I love Madison Jeffries. I love Heather Hudson. I love her as Heather Hudson, as Mac's support structure, as the civilian leader. And then I love her as Vindicator. And then my third favorite, and I mean, this is not going to be any mystery, he's probably everybody's first favorite, is Puck.
Mm-hmm.
I just think his personality as the, you know, the scrapper is awesome. And then he's a Puck. It's cool.
Right, yeah.
What about you?
So I kind of looked at it differently because I knew if I just put together my list, it's also my ideal team. So what I did instead was I thought, okay, from various runs, who got the best development as far as I was concerned? And I'll just rapid fire. So in Burn's run, I feel like Heather got the best development.
Yep.
She really did. And Mantlo continued that, obviously. Under the Mantlo run, it was so long, I cheated and did two. Madison Jeffries, absolutely. I don't need to say any more than you already did. He's amazing. And Sasquatch, becoming Wanda Langkowski.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I really enjoyed that run. Under James Hudnall's run, no one. Then under Faith...
Diamond Lil.
Well, actually, Fabian Nicieza I gave to Diamond Lil because okay. that's where she battles cancer.
Yeah, that is a very interesting plot line.
Yeah, it's really interesting, though, and her reaction. What happens when you've got cancer growing inside of you, but you have invulnerable skin? How do you get it out? I mean, it's interesting. Under Scott Lobdell, Weapon Omega, which yes. I thought was really interesting. They took Wild Child and sort of domesticated him. And he was a really interesting sort of agent, sort of secret agent. I liked him.
He was a much needed injection of energy in that book. I mean, he comes along right at the right time. That book for me was really petering out.
Yeah.
And then the mystery of who Weapon Omega is great. And he's a fun character. You know, he's really enjoying his sort of Hollywood good looks because they fix his face and they get him on meds so he's not crazy. And that's my favorite version of that character.
I agree. He's really fantastic. The Simon Furman run, no one.
Nope.
Then Steven Siegel, I wanted to pick Puck, but they just didn't develop. He's cool looking, but they didn't do a lot with him. So I would say Radius, actually, which was one of the newbies.
Oh, he's such a jerk.
That's why he's interesting, though. You know, it's yes. sort of like Guy Gardner. He's a jerk that you're interested in. He's got this force field power. He's the son of Eunice, the Untouchable. And one of his actions results in the death of a teammate. I mean, it's totally his fault. And he deals with the grief of that. And he grows from it. And I find him interesting. The Scott Lobdell era, the all new, all different. I decided I want to pick someone from there. The Major Maple Leaf was, it was this funny Canadian Mountie guy who, he was an unreliable narrator whenever he would tell his history, talk about how great his father was, but then you'd see the reality was his dad was beating him and stuff. He didn't have any powers. They all came from his flying horse. I mean, he was a fun character.
It was.
And then the Greg Pak, Fred Van Lente era was Marina. So just because of what the changes they made to her, she gets a prize there.
So there is one member of the team that you have let's see, disparaged.
I have one that you disparage as well.
You have shunned that I would like to defend.
And see, I put the person you're about to defend, I put him in my worst list. So who is your defense of?
You have listed Mannequin as one of the worst members of the team. Now,
it's just a fact.
Those of you who are unfamiliar, he is he's a medical doctor, so respect the profession, sir. He is a medical doctor who joins Alpha Flight in the second era, the second Mantle era, the Jim Lee era, and he has the ability to produce three parts of his own primordial development or his evolutionary chain. He can produce these primordial goo that, you know, his like double-celled amoeba self, a caveman self, you know, with wild strength and agility, and then a future self that is brilliant with teleportation powers. Now, I will argue, and I've said this to you, he is one Tom King maxi series away from getting his own MCU movie. He is a character. Fully serious here.
You got to quit day drinking.
He is a character whose power set plays into the very idea of how we evolve as characters, how we evolve as people. Every single time he uses his character, he is confronted by not only his own mortality, but the fact that he is only one brief moment on a continuum of the evolution of life. And every time he uses his power, he endangers himself because if one of his other selves is killed, especially the two from the past, then he's going to die in the present. And so I think he's a character that plays with time really interestingly, plays with mortality really interestingly. He's also a doctor, so there's a baked-in element of life or death and a real meditation on life and death. And then I think he is a very reluctant superhero. In fact, the only reason he really stays with Alpha Flight is because he's fallen in love with Kara, the purple girl. He is never meant to be a superhero. And in fact, in Bill Mantlo's final issue, he says an Alphan will die, and Mannequin literally looks up at him and goes, "Oh, it's me, isn't it?" And then spends the rest of the issue trying to talk Mantlo out of killing him successfully. And so I think that he already has a very weird issue devoted to him. He has a really unique power set. He has a really unique career. And I'm not joking with you at all. I think he is one great writer away from being a defining character of our age. So now go ahead, trash him all you want, but in your heart, he is a major potential waiting to happen.
Oh, yes, he is a major potential waiting to happen. Everything that you described that sounded cool was not on the page.
It is.
Instead, it's, hey, caveman, go punch that guy. Hey, highbrow, I have an idea. Oh, wait, highbrow, your idea is better. Do that, okay?
Okay,
I mean,
it was page, like, he's a Hanna-Barbera character.
Yeah, it's like Snapper Carr, bossing around the better Johnny Thunder bossing around the genie, and the genie's smarter than him. And it just now that one issue where he leaves the team, and you're right, they break the fourth wall. Here's the crazy thing: it reads like Grant Morrison's final issue of Animal Man. And the weird thing is that issue, if I'm off by a month, forgive me, guys, but I thought I remembered seeing this. That issue where he's talking to the camera is on the shelves the same month that Animal Man number 5 is, the Coyote's Tail.
Crazy. Crazy.
And look how diverse their careers were. Bill Mantlo's career went one way, and Grant Morrison's went another. I mean, just crazy. And yeah, I mean, you know, if Mantlo hadn't been in that horrible accident, what could he have done with his career if that's the path he was on? Could have been amazing.
Yeah, he was evolving. So I know Mannequin's on your – I have other worst as well. So, but you want to go next with one?
Well, I have my honorable mention real quick.
Okay.
So the character who you love to take the mickey out of is Windshear.
His power is hard air, which sounds like something – it sounds like the title of a movie from the 80s starring a disgraced NFL linebacker as an action star. Like it just doesn't – it really does. It's, Lawrence Taylor in Hard Air.
I mean, it's no different than, force fields with a wind machine. I mean, that's really – it's what he is. I mean, he's essentially creating force fields, with air. And I think he had a cool power set. He had a cool look. He provided a much-needed frontline hero, a person of color. I mean, Laura Dean was great, but she was a side character at best, So the only thing that really was the stumbling blocks was one, he was British. So, okay, it's a Canadian team. Why do we have a Brit? And then he was always incredibly insecure and stood to the point where they made that too much of who he was. So I think he really, again, a lot of potential on the page. I liked it when they made him the press secretary for the team. That was kind of interesting. But another character that could have been great.
Yeah, I like his power set, and I liked the insecurity angle, though you're right, they played it into the ground. His original costume, he looks like a suppository. Like, it is not a cool costume, man. He looks like a medical device. Like, I did not buy him for a minute. So yeah, again, could be great, but not on the page.
All right, so worst members.
Marina. I mean, Marina is...
Bing.
First of all, she's disgusting. Like, she is a slime, gross alien creature who is she's like a bad 90s alien movie who's biologically programmed to mate with any other slime alien creature she encounters in order to produce more slime aliens to take over the world. Her power, she's basically Aqua Girl, which, she's as useful as he is as Aquaman is in the Super Friends.
Wow.
If it doesn't involve water, she's not doing anything. And in the second damn issue of the book, she disembowels Puck.
Right.
Because she's losing control. And every flip-in story about Marina is about the Plodex, where she's, her DNA. Well,
it's not just every story about her. Every story she's in.
Yes.
I mean, that's the only time she shows up is for her. It's like, and you see her on the cover, you're like, oh, Plodex. Okay, here we go.
It's awful. And then she has the gall to marry Namor.
Right.
And not enjoy it. Like, I happen to be straight. Even I would be like, oh, Namor would be a fun husband. Like, she marries Namor and does not in any way take advantage of imperious sex. Like, she's a downer. She almost takes him down too. She helps take the Avengers down. She helps destroy Monica Rambeau, Captain Marvel, which I'll never forgive her for, even though it was Dr. Druid's fault. She's disgusting. I don't just hate her. She's not just my least favorite member of Alpha Flight. She might be one of my three favorite least characters of all time.
Well, I would say once you get to that, especially the miniseries in 2011 when they reimagined her.
It's the only time she's okay.
She's okay. Every other time, the worst. Anyone else on the list, or was it just the Marina list?
No, I hate Marina. Just not a fan. I also Goblin. I don't know what Mantlo was trying to force down everybody's throat, but Goblin was a freaky looking character. They couldn't control it. I did not like Goblin either.
She was like a spider monkey loose in the apartment, in Friends or something. It was nuts.
I was super happy to see Goblin go.
Yep.
Not a big fan at all. And then I would say, a character who is Alpha Flight adjacent, maybe, mm-hmm. that I definitely could do without was I was not a fan of Flashback. That villain could produce multiple, selves, and mm-hmm. then one gets killed. And I don't know, interesting idea, but he's not quite Mannequin.
I was just going to say, funny how similar he is to Mannequin, and one's great, one's not. Interesting.
Well, he's Crystal Pepsi Mannequin. So
okay, fair enough.
What about you?
Marina, absolutely. All those reasons. Goblin, absolutely. Mannequin on my list. Oh. Sorry. Auric and Steel, or Silver. Auric and Silver.
Oh, God, yeah.
Who were like the poor man's Aurora and Northstar, who were around to do nothing, and then they died, and that was a thing, too. It just could do without. And then probably the most egregious one in the later years was this character called Wire. He was during Simon Furman's Extreme era.
Yeah.
And the internet, he starts off not that interesting, but his backstory is he's involved with a lot of the development of Weapon X stuff. So he feels a lot of guilt for helping, you know, create some Weapon X type stuff. So, okay, that's interesting. Specifically Weapon Omega. He kills a bunch of people, and then suddenly he's on the team because he's extreme. I don't know. And it was also during, I like Pat Broderick, but again, this might not have been the right fit for him because of what Simon Furman was trying to do. Again, the art was all fine. It's just, I didn't enjoy it probably because of the story. Either way, I could do without Wire completely.
I had literally blacked him out of my mind because then when you said his name, I pictured him and he's like, he's really hairsuit. And so I was like, oh yeah, that guy was gross. Like, yeah, he's the guy you don't want to be showering next to in the gym. He's just
right. Yeah. So let's talk positives. Let's talk about who's your ideal team. So the original Alpha Flight was 8 members. Right? So I'm going to tell you, out of all eras of Alpha Flight, put together your ideal team, please. 8 members.
Okay. So I've got Heather Vindicator leading.
Yep.
You've got to have Puck. I think he's an essential member of Alpha Flight.
Yep.
I think you have to have Sasquatch. Again, essential member of Alpha Flight. You need a big gun. You need a tank.
We're lining up perfectly so far.
Okay. I'm going to include Aurora. Mm. I don't want both Aurora and Northstar. And I do think Northstar is the better character, but he's so entrenched in X-Men now that I'll leave him in the X-World and I'll keep her. So I've got Vindicator, I've got Sasquatch, Puck, Aurora.
Interesting. I'm going with you as we go there. I flipped it. I took Northstar instead of Aurora because I liked his abrasive attitude.
Yeah, again, better character, but I'd like both of them in play, so I think she'd get more development in Alpha Flight. Definitely Madison Jeffries box. I want the 90s, early 90s, late 80s box outfit, because that's awesome.
Right there with you.
I have to have Mannequin.
Oh my God. We have diverged drastically, folks.
Okay, he's their field medic, and I think he's also their conscious. Like there's a character type that shows up in comic books like this. Doug Ramsey was like this in New Mutants.
Sure.
Flex is like this in Volume 2. The sort of innocent non-combatant who reminds them that they're human, so I want him in there.
Okay. Now, does he still get to talk to the camera?
I think that would be a lot of fun.
Okay.
So yeah, I would leave that in there. So I'm going to keep, so I've got him, which I know is diverting from your list completely. Mm-hmm. I love Elizabeth Two Young Men. I want Talisman in there.
It's on my list too.
Okay. So what number are we up to?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You're at 7 because you made a mistake and had a Mannequin. Okay. So you've got one more left.
Okay. And then Weapon Omega. I want Wild Child, but as Weapon Omega, because I want there to be some love triangles. And you know what? I'm going to make a swap. I'm actually going to swap out Aurora for Diamond Lil, because I love Diamond Lil. She's one of my favorite characters.
Okay.
And I want there to be like Heather, Madison, Lil, Weapon Omega. I want there to be a lot of soap opera. So okay. I'm going to swap Aurora out. So that's my team. What about yours?
I also had Weapon Omega on my team as well. So, but I'll change some things up just to give a little bit of differences. So Heather, absolutely. Oh, well, by the way, also I approach mine as like the role-playing game thing again. I can't help it.
Balance, yeah.
All the power sets, what they call templates or, there's a term in Mutants and Masterminds that's escaping me. I can't remember. But Heather is the leader. She's also the energy blaster. You also get a female character, which is great. You know, Puck is the pugilist. He's the acrobat. You know, Sasquatch is your tank, but he's also your scientist. Northstar instead of Aurora. Sorry. A speedster, diversity. You're getting the abrasive attitude. All that kind of stuff's in there. Talisman, you get your magic person. Also female. Also First Nations. Also, I liked her when she was distant and cold and bitchy. I like that version of her.
Too.
Manipulative. Yep. Box, your Madison Jeffries, because you got to have a tech guy. Also, he creates transport for the whole team, right? Yeah. He's great. So I'll switch one out rather than taking Weapon Omega. Well, you know what? I'm all over the board here. I was going to take either Weapon Omega or Nemesis. You got to have a weapons master, right? Yeah. You know, someone who's mysterious. Would Nemesis would have fit that? Whereas Weapon Omega fits the savage, the bestial type character. Either one. I'll stick with Weapon Omega for now. And the last one, I was going to take Murmur, actually, from Volume 2. She had mental powers where she could touch people and get them to do what she wanted. She was a little less powerful. Like, Purple Girl, I always felt, was too powerful.
Yeah.
And so this was like a slightly less powerful version. Also, you need to have a mental-powered character on the team. So I think Murmur, and again, it gives you another female character. It gives you someone young who's learning the ropes. Also, you've got the French heritage there. So I think Murmur would be a good fit.
Yeah, I have to say, I did question when I was reading Volume 2, why didn't you just use Purple Girl? Like, you literally just recreated a female character whose powers are to control people.
Yep.
So I thought that was odd. But yeah, that's interesting. I don't love, of the rookies from Volume 2, the one that I considered adding, my hardest cut was Flex. He was either Flex. Yeah, he would have been in place of Mannequin. So where you build template power set, I build for drama. Like, I want personality types. And so I want a gateway character. I want that, like, non-natural combatant to you know, be the character that is earnestly afraid and is earnestly like, oh my God, this is so weird. We're fighting, you know, a giant mountain. And so Flex would have been in place of Mannequin for me. But Mannequin's more useful because he's a doctor. But I liked Flex a lot because he was so ineffectual.
I just couldn't get on board with him. I understand the need for that type of character to make it makes everyone else look more heroic, but it didn't do much for me. By the way, I just remembered something else bad about Mannequin. Yeah, here's how terrible he is. So he's a doctor, right? Which means he went to medical school, and then he did 4 years of residency, which means he's at least, what, 26?
I know where you're going, yes.
17-year-old girl he was dating? Not good optics.
In the comic, he is depicted as much younger. So I have always, in my head canon, I've always made him like Doogie Howser, MD. I've always been like he was a child prodigy, and so he's Doogie Howser, I guess.
Oh my God, that's perfect. That is brilliant.
So I always had him being a prodigy, so that he was closer in age.
So one note I gotta say, and this is, I'm throwing somebody a bone here. For the team, I would have this ideal team, right? But I'd have them have headquarters not just in one place, but in all, like, most of the major cities in Canada. Like, you've got a headquarters in Vancouver, you've got a headquarters in Thunder Bay, you've got one in Montreal, and then you would have a headquarters in Moncton, New Brunswick. And that is specific for Siskoid, who always says there's no Alpha Flight members from his part of the country. So there you go.
That's good. That's perfect.
All right. So then, last big question on the table here, because we've been talking for so long about Alpha Flight. I don't care. I'm loving every second of this.
Me too.
How? Kevin Feige, Kevin Ross, how do you do Alpha Flight, the MCU movie?
So I think this is where you play the government angle. So they've already built the Sokovia Accords, right? And there's already been like a sort of government against the Avengers. There's the Wakandan government in play, and the Avengers were they too close to Wakanda? And there's this whole new crop of Avengers, the sort of trusted archetypes have moved on. And so I would play up this idea of Canada trying to get into being a world power and then coming into conflict with the Avengers over, you know, something, you know, some sort of political thing, mechanism. And then, you know, I mean, look, this is, I'm not reinventing the wheel here, right? There would be the superhero versus superhero battle, and then they go on and take on whoever, you know, the real villain. So I definitely would have them, I would introduce them as foils for the Avengers, and then really ground them, you know, let the, you know, audience get to know them, get to see their, you know, diverse power sets, their diverse personalities. And I would definitely let them still be broken characters.
Oh, yeah.
So that the audience is like, ooh, okay, the key here is they're using characters that aren't primary IPs, so they could really break them. They can do some creative stuff with them. It's, you know, kind of a Jerry Conway approach to building a JLA, right? Like, you need more C characters so that you can do real stuff to them. So that's the route I would go. What about you?
Mine's a little lengthier. I apologize. I had, the whole pitch came to me one day in the shower. It just, the whole thing, boom, fully formed. So I like your approach on the Avengers side. I went a different way. I went the X-Men route. So in order for the mind to work, they have to have already done the new X-Men and in the MCU, however they're going to do them, or at the very least Wolverine. We need to have our new Wolverine cast and in the MCU for mind to work. So you have that in play. Then you do, in some of the other movies, you tease that Alpha Flight already exists. You already mention them as an existing team. You know, maybe you do news reports like, I don't know, like, you know, across the world, superheroes are battling Kang's minions. You know, in Wakanda, you see them fighting, you know, the warriors. In New Asgard, you see those warriors. In Canada, Alpha Flight's battling to save Montreal. And you could actually show Sasquatch and Guardian, Mac, you know, like from a distance, because Sasquatch is just CGI. There's no casting involved. And then Mac, if you don't show the face, that could be anyone in the suit. So you can do that early on without ever having to cast the actors. So you do that. So the audience kind of knows they exist. Then when you get to the Alpha Flight movie, some of the casting ideas here. So Guardian is your theoretical lead. James McDonald Hudson, right? You cast some handsome leading guy, not a major celebrity, but, you know, someone that they're going to recognize, like an Anson Mount from Strange New Worlds or something, like someone who's got a rugged leading man look, but isn't super famous. Mm-hmm. Then you got to cast Heather, obviously needs to be a very strong actress. Yeah, you make sure to put Sasquatch in there because it's fun. It's a fun CGI. He's furry. He's cute. It's great visual. Sell a lot of stuffed animals and toys.
Oh, yeah.
And really play up the whole gamma radiation thing. You can connect him to Hulk or She-Hulk, whichever one you want. You got to have Box. Madison Jeffries. He is your Michael Bay Transformer.
There you go.
Most of the time in metal form, he's always moving, constantly transforming, never the same thing twice, right? And he's always pulling in more metal and transforming again. Like I'm envisioning a Michael Bay scene where he's driving around with four wheels and something smashes him and two of the wheels go fly off and he immediately transforms into a motorcycle and he's going along and they blow off another wheel and he transforms into like a badass motorized unicycle. I don't care. It would just be this amazing visual, always moving, always rolling, moving. It'd be great. And then the rest of the team, it doesn't really matter who they use. Obviously, they'd use the best characters. I trust Kevin Feige to figure that part out. But those are the ones I think you got to have. Then the movie itself, I told you, the whole thing came to me. I'm sorry. So the movie opens on a superhero battle, right? It's Alpha Flight fighting someone. I don't care. Whoever. They're fighting somebody. Could be, you know, Chitauri, whatever. And you're introducing the heroes of Alpha Flight during the battle. You're finding out that this team, sort of like what you said, is very dysfunctional. They're very argumentative. They're broken. They argue with each other all the time. And not in a fun way, like the Guardians of the Galaxy do. These characters clearly don't like each other. But even though they're bitchy, they still get the job done. So they still save the day. And the leaders, James McDonald Hudson, he's Guardian. We also see Heather. She's his wife. She's like the ordinary human assisting from a computer, you know, like Oracle or the girl in the chair, whatever. Immediately following the battle, Heather runs up and there's some tender moments between her and Mac. And then we get this extended flashback to Mac and Heather's honeymoon. And we're talking 10, 20 minutes. This isn't just a short little thing. It's the whole story of them finding Wolverine. So you're pulling the fans in with Wolverine. You're using a character that they already know. So they're finding Wolverine is a savage beast. You know, it's them nursing him back to health, helping him join Department H. You know, all these months and years pass, and they become the three best of friends. And the goal is to really get the audience emotionally involved in this hook because they like Wolverine because they've already seen him in the new X-Men stuff, and they fall in love with Mac and Heather as this great couple. We flash back to the present. The initial battle is over now, and there's that tender moment with Mac and Heather, and yes, exactly what you expect happens. Mac's super suit malfunction. Boom. Mac is dead. You know, 20, 30 minutes into the movie, and the regular people in the audience who don't know Alpha Flight's history are like, what the hell? The lead character just died, right? He's done. He's gone. Bye, Anson Mount. Go back to Star Trek. We don't need you anymore. And the rest of the movie is about Heather and getting over her grief and pulling together these dysfunctional people together as a team. So they go through the whole journey. Some major bad guy. Let's face it, it's probably Master of the World,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Heather eventually dons the supersuit. She becomes the new Guardian. You know, the threat is so large that Wolverine has to come back to Canada to help Alpha Flight fight in the final battle. Mm-hmm. And in the end, Alpha Flight is working together. They're working together really well, better than they did under Mac. Heather has managed to pull off something her husband couldn't. There you go. That's your
awesome.
Alpha Flight movie.
That is a movie I want to see. That's awesome.
You also plant some seeds. You talk about Sasquatch's origins, you know, again, tied to the Hulk and She-Hulk. But you're left, why isn't he green? What's going on there? Mm-hmm. So that lays the seeds for the second movie, which is all about your favorite, The Great Beast.
The Great Beast, yeah.
So that's my Alpha Flight MCU pitch. Thank you, Kevin Feige. Just mail me a check.
That is awesome, man. That is really good. And it's important for that to happen because to an audience, it may look like you're just doing Canada's Avengers, right?
Yep.
Guardian is Iron Man. Sasquatch is Hulk.
Exactly right.
You get Box is Iron, you know, also Iron Man, you know, and so, yeah. So, and so it would feel a little too, or Box would be Vision if they made him just a robot. It would be too familiar and it'd be like, oh, they're just Canada. They're just doing Avengers in Canada. No, I think that's awesome. And I do think it's the most, like you said, it's the most interesting story in all of Alpha Flight is Mac dying and Heather building the team better and then being a better hero than Mac ever was.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. Which would make it a real burden to do a second movie, because how do you tell the next Alpha Flight story when, you know, that has been the best part of Alpha Flight so far? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. I really like that. They'd have to change Box's name, because I learned from our buddy in Britain from the Alpha Flight Pod that Roger Box is a very dirty phrase.
Well, I think yes, it is. But I think you never even put Roger in there. It's all Madison Jeffries from start to finish.
Oh, no, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I can't imagine British translations of a name being problematic with my name Shag. So.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding, right? I actually already was, I was just watching the movie in my head. I love it. I would totally be there for it.
So we'll go opening night. I'll fly out to Arizona. We'll watch it together.
There you go.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for being on the show. We have talked for, I don't know what it's going to come out to with editing, because I'm going to take out pretty much every third word you say. And all that mannequin and James Hudnall crap. So this may only be an hour long, but right now we're over 2 hours and it's been every minute of it a joy. So thank you so much for being here and sharing your love of Alpha Flight.
And this has been great, man. This has been the gravy on my poutine. This is it's been a ton of fun. And no, this has been awesome. One, I always love getting to talk to you. And then two, there is that nice little connection that, you know, you did buy True North when you were out here visiting.
I did.
And that's fun. And then, you know, you and I are, I mean, really diehards when it comes to Alpha Flight. And so this was a conversation I was looking forward to. And you know, I always love the focus, you know, your focus on finding your joy and you know, going back and one of the best things about layering on podcasting onto the comic collecting hobby is that it prompts you to go revisit things that you probably never would revisit again. And in doing that, I was like, holy crap, volume 2, really good. And I, you know, and I'm looking forward to rereading the Scott Lobdell, you know, Clayton Henry run. And so it's, you know, just this has been a ton of fun. So I appreciate you having me. This was great.
I'm so glad that we got a chance to do this. It was an absolute blast. And I think it was almost, it's like something I had to get out of my system. It's like I had to talk about Alpha Flight somehow for a really protracted time in a super nerdy way. And it was necessary. By the way, there is one person I forgot to thank or curse throughout this whole process. I mentioned my 9 statues of Alpha Flight, which, by the way, were a real bitch to get hands on secondhand, by the way, because I was never around when they all came out initially. It's all down to Diablo Frank. It's all his fault, because I was out visiting him in Houston one time, and they had a Heather Hudson action figure a comic book store. I'm like, that's cool. I'd love to get that. But no, I can't do that. Once I start, I'll never stop. And so that bastard went around the corner and bought it and gave it to me. So I went immediately from buying one to buying all the Alpha Flight action figures. That wasn't good enough. I had to step up to the statues. So I owe Frank a thank you and screw you, sir. So
well, I'm glad you painted his act of kindness in the negative, because you were undermining everything I had heard about him.
Perfect. Excellent. Enough about Frank. It's all about you, buddy. So this has been great, Sean. I am always desperate for any chance to get you on a show and chat, because it's always so much fun. I really appreciate the energy you bring and the unbridled passion and the joy and the humor. And thank you so much for just being you, Sean.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear. I'm going to go tell my wife that somebody thinks that.
One person on the planet.
One person is thankful that I'm me.
Greg Arujo is looking at going, is that the same guy I podcast with? Because I don't know.
he's just going, he's fine.
Oh, yes, he is. Yes, he is. All right. Well, folks, that is going to do it. Come back next time when we cover another topic that brings us joy. And what will that be? Well, I'm not going to tell you right now, because quite frankly, I haven't decided. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm Sean.
And remember, life is short. Focus on the positive. Find your joy.